kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Tell us the most profane thing you can in French.
Wait. The most profane thing.
Écoute-moi bien, sale fils de pute. Tu veux bien aller te faire enculer avec tes conneries.
And what does that translate to?
Listen to me very well, son of a whore. You can go fuck yourself with your bullshit.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me, as usual, CJ. CJ, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Allergies are killing me, but other than that, I'm fine.
Yay, allergies!
Yeah. That over-the-counter drug shit doesn't do anything either. I'm going to see a doctor about getting prescription shit that's strong.
Well, what are you trying over-the-counter?
I don't even remember. It's just generic allergy pills. That you would get at like Walmart or something.
Because I know Claritin is usually pretty good. But
yeah, that's definitely not Claritin that I have. I know that.
Using the generic shit?
Basically, yeah, that's what we have in the house, so that's what I've been using. It doesn't last very long. But hopefully it lasts long enough to do the episode without sneezing and blowing my nose constantly.
I guess we'll find out. But yeah. A lot of stuff going on today. We got tons of news this week. Handful of reviews to take care of. Hopefully Eternal will show up because she's got some stuff to talk about as well. And then I have an interview with Cyril Imber of .emu to talk about Wonder Boy, Dragon's Trap, and all other kind of fun .emu goodness. And of course I had to repeatedly ask if we would get stuff like East Origins on Xbox or not.
Just keep bugging the devs until eventually they bring stuff that you want.
I want it to
eventually
happen.
They'll just get annoyed at you and then they'll do it. Because they don't want to hear it anymore.
It's like, could we just release it and shut this asshole up?
it's basically the same thing that happened with Activision and Black Ops 2. Make it backwards compatible so people stop asking.
Yeah. Get people to finally shut up about it. It is nice that we have allergy conversation going on in the chat.
It is true. It's kind of funny.
Claritin works for no pulse. Ricky uses over-the-counter Zyrtec. Good stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Oh, man. Anyway, tons and tons and tons of news to go over. There's a lot of news. And let's start
there
off
really
with the fun stuff every month. Not only did we find out the new Games with Gold for May, but PlayStation Plus for May as well. Usually we've been getting those on off weeks. So it's good that we could tackle everything in one go.
Yeah, and then do a little comparison, which I already have an opinion formed about. But
I have an opinion on which is better, but honestly, I'm kind of underwhelmed with both. And I'm sure a lot of it stems from the fact that I own pretty much all of them. So they don't really... Let's start with... Xbox. The Xbox 360 from May 1st through the 15th is going to get Star Wars Force Unleashed 2, which is a nice game.
Yeah.
May 16th through the 31st, Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, arguably the most respected of all the Lego games. Like, everybody really loves that one.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. And then it got me thinking with those two... Star Wars titles being backward compatible already. Like, what are they going to do for May the 4th this year? Like, the only thing I
think that was the whole idea with the Lego, or two Star Wars games in one month.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering if we'll get anything new. Like, last year on May the 4th, we got Force Unleashed 1 and 2.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking that was their whole thing with this, though, is they might not do anything on the 4th specifically, but just for the month of May, have the two Star Wars games.
I'm hoping Lego Star Wars 3 shows up.
That'd be cool, or, hell, there's another Star Wars game, right, that's not,
I think the Clone Wars, something like that. I don't know.
I don't know. I know that I don't really remember any Star Wars games aside from Force Unleashed 1 and 2 that weren't Lego on 360.
But decent month for 360. Xbox One for the entire month of May is getting Guiana Sisters Twisted Dreams, which is a really solid platformer. And May 16th through June 15th is Lara Croft in the Temple of Osiris. So,
which they pulled a little bit of a shitty move with that, just because it was literally on sale like during the spring sale.
Yeah, it happens.
I was gonna buy it too, and then I passed it up, and I'm glad I did. Save a little bit of money.
I had it from launch. So overall, four solid games, solid month overall. Nothing for me.
But. Yeah, I mean, the only one I actually own out of the four is Star Wars: The Force Unleashed 2. But I'm like, I don't know if I'll ever bother playing the other three. I've already played Lego Star Wars before, just not on my own account.
No,
but I liked that game, so I might. But I don't know. The other two just.
I don't know. I'm down. I think they're all good titles for the most part.
Yeah, so. It's a decent month. At least it's not like shitty all around. Like we've definitely had months that are worse.
Oh yeah, it's hard for me to form an opinion because I have them all, so they do nothing for me. And then on the flip side, PlayStation Plus for May, the PlayStation 3 is getting Port Royale 3: Pirates and Merchants, which, whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
and
it's not a popular. It's a very niche title.
Yeah, and then they're also getting Blood Knights, which, fun fact, is backward compatible on the Xbox One. So that seems like a missed opportunity. PlayStation Vita is getting Laser Disco Defenders and Type Rider. Both of those are also on PlayStation 4 as well. And then PS4.
And that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Always good to get extra stuff. And then PS4 is getting Tales from the Borderlands. Which, it seems like Telltale loves giving stuff away in PlayStation Plus and games with gold.
And let's be honest, Tales from the Borderlands is the best Telltale game. So,
yeah, it's definitely up there. And then the other game for PS4 is Abzu.
Which is another really awesome game that I actually really want and wish it was on the Xbox side of things.
Well, it came out much earlier on PS4, so I'm sure that's part of it. Fun thing, though, the Europeans are not getting Abzu.
That's interesting.
They are getting the game Alien Nation instead.
Huh. Did Abzu not release in Europe?
I'm pretty sure it released over there. I don't know why the change, why the difference.
Yeah, that's really weird. The only idea I'd have is if it didn't release, so they had to put something else up for them.
Yeah, I have no idea. Overall, two solid months on both sides. I don't know. I kind of, like, the edge is kind of with Tales of the Borderlands, or Borderlands and Abzu.
That's my thought. But I think the PlayStation lineup's a bit better.
But overall, I think all four of the games on Xbox are solid, where, you know, the PS3 ones are kind of eh, and the Vita ones are eh.
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
Didn't we review Laser Disco Defenders, and you were really loving that game?
It's good. It's just, you know, it's not a barn burner. It's,
well, I don't know. To be honest, Guiana Sisters isn't really a barn burner either.
I don't know. That's a really, really good game. And the soundtrack is amazing.
I think I got to give the month to PlayStation, for my personal opinion.
Makes sense. I don't know. Just for me, it's kind of like, they're both good, I guess. But I really don't care about, any of them, because I have pretty much everything there.
Yeah. That's the hard part about it. With gold and being, especially reviewing, and Guiana Sisters, you probably got a review copy of, didn't you?
No, that was before we started doing reviews.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say that seems like one that would have been right up there, but yeah, that was 2014. So,
Yeah, that was like right on the cusp of when we started.
Apparently it's really hard, according to like the true achievements. It's a hard completion. Yeah. Most people don't even finish the story.
No, that's like that with a lot of games anymore these days, though. People don't finish anything anymore.
Yeah.
I have cats irritating, like, oh, pay attention to me. No, I'm busy. What do you want?
What? What do you want?
Friggin' cats. let's see. What other news do we have? A lot of backward compatibility additions this week on Xbox.
Yeah.
Like a ridiculous amount. On Tuesday, 3 were added with Assault Heroes 2, Commanders, Attack of the Genons, and Time Shift, which went from $3 on GameStop to $10.
Not surprising. I've owned that game forever. I was actually, like, I did not expect Time Shift at all. Like, that was a surprise game for me. It's just like, that's a really weird one, and I'm really happy that it's backwards compatible.
I think today's lineup was a lot more unexpected for me. Like, two of them make sense. Dead Space 2 and Dead Space 3. That is awesome.
Yeah, that one was trilogy.
And then there's, you know, very, very good chance that those two are going to hit EA Access soon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, because Dead Space 3, I really liked the demo when I played that.
But then the other four today kind of caught me off guard. Four-pack of Cabela's games. Cabela's Alaskan Adventures, Cabela's Dangerous Hunts 2013, Cabela's Hunting Expeditions, and Cabela's Survival, Shadows of Katmai.
Yeah, it's weird. Weird amount of them. Like, I mean, I guess that puts... Is that all of them that were on 360?
I think there's a couple more.
Jeez, they made a lot of them.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how popular that series really is. It's like, it doesn't really seem like one that would be big.
And even crazies, they're all like $30 games digitally still. Then again, yeah, it's Activision, so what do you expect?
Oh, is it Activision, really?
Yeah. Yep, Activision handles the Cabela's license, so...
Yep.
Hey, at least Activision is supporting the program.
That's true. That's really weird, because I think the only thing before this was Call of Duty. It's really funny to move from Call of Duty straight to Cabela's.
They've had a bunch of indies, too.
I don't remember just how much, like... I can't really tell when a game is Activision, because it's just like, it surprises me when I find out that they are.
Let's see. Like, 3D Ultra Mini Golf is Activision. Assault Heroes 2 from Tuesday. Call of Duty, a bunch of those. Commanders, Attack on Genon, Gin Rummy, Golf Tee It Up, and Unbound Saga. Those are all Activision, so.
I didn't know that 3D Ultra Mini Golf was Activision.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one. But a lot of them seem very recent. I guess Activision's finally getting on board with it.
I guess. Maybe they saw how much money they made in sales from, like, Black Ops and Black Ops 2 getting re-released. And they're like, oh, man, people are going to fucking eat up all these Cabela games.
Yeah. It's funny how many of them there are. And all of them at the same time, too. It's funny.
Four of them. Four friggin' Cabela games. Why?
I wonder just how many people are playing that today.
No pulse. I got the notification for one of the Cabela games, and I thought, I own that? Oh, man. Let's see. What other news do we have here? Probably the biggest news of the week for me, the new expansion for Forza Horizon 3 has been unveiled.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was...
Hot Wheels is coming to Forza Horizon.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. I don't think there's ever been a DLC for Forza that has excited me more than this one. Like, Blizzard Mountain was like, awesome, I love snow, and then this happens.
It looks ridiculous. It's released, not only is it coming, but it's coming May 9th. so it's just around the corner. It includes a new chain of islands off the coast of Australia, linked together by the familiar orange Hot Wheels tracks, with loops and corkscrews and jumps and all kind of crazy shit.
Yeah, I'm excited. This looks like Trackmania.
It looks ridiculous. It also comes with 10 new cars, including 3 full-sized Hot Wheels Classics, the Twin Mill, Rip Rod, and Bone Shaker.
So, yeah.
That is ridiculous.
The Bone Shaker is fucking awesome. I actually had one of those as a kid.
Priced at $20 and included in the expansion pass. So, God.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to wait for a sale on this one. Like, Blizzard Mountain, I waited and then I got it for $10. This, I think, I get paid on the 10th and I'm going to buy it immediately and start playing.
Speaking of racing, Three Fields Entertainment announced a new game releasing in May called Danger Zone, which is basically Burnout's Crash Mode, this time with cars instead of golfing. The biggest disappointment to this news is launching on Steam and PS4 only.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm pretty disappointed
what the
about
fuck?
That.
given
thought
the,
for sure that they would do everything.
Like, seriously, like, I don't know. That is such a gut punch in my eyes. Like, disappointing is such an understatement for me. Because I love
I really hope
that
it comes soon to Xbox as well. Maybe it's just that the Xbox One version got delayed because it failed, like, testing or whatever. There were problems.
Well, they said that they're a small team and they just focused on Steam and PS4. So it seems like it was a conscious decision to only go with those two. Which, I don't know. That fucking sucks.
Yeah, that's pretty shitty.
So, as much as I love Three Fields Entertainment, I don't agree with their choice to not do an Xbox release of fucking Danger Zone. Given how popular Burnout has been on the Xbox, it's like even the days of like Burnout 3 and Burnout Revenge, those felt synonymous with Xbox back in the day. Despite being on everything. And the fact that they're just completely skipping the platform, that sucks.
So, yeah.
Hopefully it changes, but I guess we'll see. Let's see. Ubisoft is releasing Winterfest DLC for Steep on May 3rd with new challenges, new costumes, and they're adding sledding to the game.
Sledding.
Yes.
Oh, that's weird. That seems like such a casual thing that doesn't really need to be in a game like that.
But yeah, Winterfest DLC releasing just in time for the chilly months ahead of June and July. Will cost $11.99 or free for the season pass gold edition owners.
Well, that's not that expensive.
It's cheap enough. And you get sledding. You get to fucking...
Yeah. It just seems so weird.
Jackbox announced that Jackbox Party Pack 4 is on the way this fall and will include Fibbage 3. Not much news is known. They only announced the one game. They did show off a feature that spectators can now vote for a second decoy answer. So
that's pretty interesting.
So if you have bigger streams or bigger parties, you know, more people could be involved.
That's kind of cool.
Yep. And then last bit of news that I have here is that Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite had a nice info drop this week. Is slated to release September 19th, and 8 new characters were confirmed with Ultron, Hulk, Thor, Hawkeye, Rocket Raccoon, Chun-Li, Strider, and Chris Redfield all being confirmed for the game. Kind of getting worried that we haven't heard about Wolverine or Deadpool yet.
Yeah, well, could that be because of Fox having
a lot of people think that Marvel is going to be all Spidey and just focus on like the cinematic universe? Although rumor—I don't know if it's true—rumor that they might be DLC, which sucks.
Yeah, because like, then you got to pay extra.
Wolverine not in Marvel vs. Capcom, that Yeah, I might not really buy weird. The game if Wolverine's not in there, just based on principle.
Yeah, Wolverine is... I mean, come on, that character is pretty much abused in the games. Like, you gotta have it. He's one of the more powerful characters.
Yeah. Oh,
man. Does that mean none of the X-Men are gonna be in it?
I don't know.
Well, my thought is that doesn't Fox own the rights to X-Men and... Deadpool?
Just movies, not games.
Okay, I was going to say it's possible that they don't want to give up the licensing
for that.
The rumors
were that Marvel is going to be spiteful and that they're going to leave those characters out because Fox won't play nice with them movie-wise. But I don't know.
That's still shitty to do for the fans.
Hopefully they come to their senses and, you know, at least include Deadpool and Wolverine. Like, they are iconic characters. But they also announced a deluxe edition will be available for $89.99, which includes the 2017 character pass with 6 new fighters, including Sigma from Mega Man X, and then costumes and blah, blah, blah. They will also have a collector edition, because of course it will. They are partnering with Triforce Productions, who have been making, like, all the big collector edition stuff lately. Like, basically anything you see on a shelf behind me, I think, was made by Triforce at this point. Like, they're the ones who've done, like, the Resident Evil one for GameStop, the For Honor one from GameStop. So, yeah, again, basically whatever's behind me. It is going to come with 4 interlocking character figures of Iron Man, Captain Marvel, Chun-Li, and Mega Man X, as well as a case with light-up Infinity Stones and a steel book for $200.
Oof. I mean, that's pretty cool, though. But, God, I just couldn't imagine spending that much money on a game.
Yeah. These collector's editions are getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not somebody that gets into that a whole lot, because I don't think I could handle it.
Like, I can't handle it either, but
that would take up pretty much a whole paycheck. It's just like, screw that.
I think I gotta just stop buying into this crap, though. It's just,
yeah,
they're getting too expensive for what's there isn't really worth it.
Exactly.
I don't freaking know. But yeah, that's the news of the week that I got.
I don't really have anything else. I didn't even watch the Call of Duty reveal because I don't care.
Me neither.
That was big news for a lot of people.
Oh, man. No giveaways to do on the show this week, but we do have 2 Gleam giveaways going on right now, so check our Twitter page for info on those. We're doing 2 copies of Voodoo Vince on Steam, which is awesome. And then
that's pretty cool.
The Disney Afternoon Collection on Xbox One, which I'm excited about.
Nice. I'm surprised you didn't do that one as a write-in. But it is only 1 copy, so.
Yeah. So I think write-in stuff is going to be mainly for stuff that we have more than 1 copy of.
Yeah, because it sucks to have everybody put that much effort in and then only 1 person walks away with anything.
Yeah. So I think doing random giveaways for stuff is a lot easier and less flipping of a Gears of War coaster.
Yeah, I bet that Gears of War coaster has red rubbed off of it from how many times it's hit the table.
And then congrats to our most recent Gleam contest winner, Julian Spike, who won Trulon the Shadow Engine on Xbox One.
Nice. Have fun with that one.
Fun stuff there. But yeah, that's all the news I got. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about?
No. I mean, I just saw something, but I didn't get to look it up, so I don't want to talk about it and not know what I'm talking about. So,
what is it?
Just something along the lines of Microsoft has partnered up with Studio Gobo, which were the makers of the Disney Infinity toys.
Yeah.
So it could be possible that Microsoft is looking into a game that has toys with it.
That'd be pretty cool.
But no, besides that, I don't really got anything. There was a lot of news, but we pretty much tackled it all.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. So, I guess we'll just dive into reviews then, huh?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We're going to kick things off with a monster pack of PlayStation VR content. It's kind of been building up for a little bit, and I figure let's knock them all out in one shot. So we're going to kick things off with Bandit 6 Combined Arms, developed and published by Climax Studios. It released April 18th on PlayStation VR for $12.99. Grab your VR headset and man the tail guns of a World War II bomber, fending off swarms of attacking fighters, then be thrust into the heart of war, defending key positions against waves of incoming enemy forces. From facing the enemy's deadliest aerial weapons, rockets, jets, and missiles, to manning your machine guns, mortars, and cannons against hordes of enemy helicopters, tanks, jeeps, and much more, you'll fight on land, on sea, and in the air. This is basically two games in one. There's Bandit 6, and then I forget what the subtitle of the other one is, but we'll split these up. Bandit 6 is the tail gunner section of the game, where you're commanding a tail gunner in the air, and you have to just look around and take down planes that are coming at you and trying to attack you. And sometimes you'll have like protection missions where there'll be planes flying around you and you have to protect them. It's basically waves, timed waves, or defeat X number of opponents in so much time. They have upgrades after every level. You earn 1 to 3 stars based on your score. The more stars you unlock, the more missions you unlock. There's what the fuck is it, like 30 some stages in the game, I want to say.
That's a nice amount.
Yeah, there's a lot of content in the game, and there's a lot of reason to go back and try again to get those 3 stars in every level, because as you unlock more stars, you unlock better weapons. Once you get 25 stars, you get like a second level of your gun. And once you get 50 stars, you get the third level. And then those, they each also have upgrades that you can buy as well, like improved damage, improved firing speed, and improved cooldowns. And it is so addictive. Like, the tracking in the game is fantastic because it's all head tracking. There's no move controllers that you got dick with. It's just all based on where you're looking. And then you use the trigger on the DualShock to shoot. So it is
simple,
incredibly easy to play, and it is ridiculously fun.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, the second half of the game is more of like a tower defense game, where you have like 4 different placements that you could set down, like machine guns or grenade launchers or like heavy artillery guns, and it'll be like survive 3 minutes against an attack of, you know, helicopters will come flying in, dropping off tanks, boats will come flying up to the shore, and you just gotta destroy everything you can. It's completely different game for the most part from the standard Bandit 6, but it's cool that it's basically a 2-in-1.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's like you can play one or the other.
It's right? It's just you could, you know, you just back out to the main menu and then pick a different one whenever you're done.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's interesting. It's from what I had saw, were those two separate games that were released on like for Gear VR and then just got combined?
It's possible. It certainly feels like it could be, but I am not positive because I don't really follow other VR.
Well, I just know that I see like Bandit 6 on Android, and it's like, and it looks to just be the Bandit 6 part.
It's very possible that it's, you know, sold a la carte other ways. So, all I know is that for $13, the two of them together on PlayStation VR, this is an absolute buy it. This might be some of the most fun I've had with the VR recently. It's just the tracking is spot on. I didn't have any kind of gripes trying to get things to detect properly, which is going to come up a couple of times in the next few reviews. But the tracking was great. The visuals are great. And it's just fun. It is just stupidly enjoyable fun. And for $13, it is an absolute must-own for a PlayStation VR owner.
Yeah, because $13 for PlayStation VR is basically like a $5 game.
But yeah, buy it. Bandit 6 Combined Arms, buy it. Next game to talk about is called Herocade, developed and published by Lucid Sight Incorporated, released April 18th on PlayStation VR for $14.99. Herocade is a 9-in-1 VR collection featuring the award-winning Dread Halls and Sisters. You, Player One, are trapped in a future VR construct. Play your way through each VR experience to unlock the mystery of your imprisonment and the future of the human race. I can't.
That's a lot of games in one.
I can't comment much on the story to it because I didn't. Like, I played each of the mini games in there, and most of them are, like, ignorable. There is not much memorable in this game. I'll go down the lineup. There is Polyrunner VR, which is you're basically just flying through a little desert area and you tilt your head left and right and you just go through things. That's it.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. There's
405 Road Rage, which you are a car on an interstate and you have to just hold the trigger on the controller to accelerate and use head tracking to steer left and right through the traffic. It's fun, it's enjoyable, but it's not something that's going to hold you.
Yeah.
Zombie Strike, I thought this was one of the more unique ones. I thought, oh god, it's just going to be another zombie shooter. This one,
yeah,
you're like based in a satellite, and it uses head tracking that you just aim. You're looking down at, like, a field of zombies. And
oh, that's cool.
Oh, my God, Cat. What the fuck are you...
Yes. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. Like, she just about knocked my computer monitor completely over.
Wow. Yeah, I've had a cat knock over a TV. It's not fun.
Friggin' idiot. But, yeah, you are... God, now everything is knocked over. Damn it, Bean. Yeah, it is satellite view, and you have to aim and shoot missiles down at the zombies down below. And because it's, you know, you're basically aiming from a satellite, you have to take into account, like, the time delay of when you launch the attack until they hit. So it's not just, like, point and shoot. So there's some strategy in there. You have to make precise moves and take your time with it. But
that one sounds really cool.
It's really neat. It is neat. It kind of gets old after a bit. Like, it doesn't vary things up too much. They add new zombie types and.
Well, can the zombies do anything to you though? You mean really?
No, because you're based in a satellite. There are people trying to escape to a bunker that you kind of have to protect them from, and if they all die, it's game over.
Yeah, that answers my question. I was just wondering if there was any way you could lose, because that kind of eliminates the fun if there's nothing that can actually happen.
If all the people get killed, it's game over.
All right.
And then you can purchase upgrades in between, fun stuff like that. Space Bit Attack is basically like a 3D VR Space Invaders, which it's okay. It's not super deep.
Doesn't sound real. 3D Space Invaders, huh?
Pretty much. It's you use the controls are weird because you're using the analog stick to move your ship up, down, left, and right, but you're still looking with the head tracking to aim. So it can get kind of confusing. Gummy No Yummy is like a block pushing puzzle game that the camera.
I like the name.
It has a fun, like, super Japanese sense of humor but the camera angles are god awful. And when you could like hit the buttons on, or the shoulder buttons to move the camera like 90 degrees, but it has to like fade out and then fade back. It doesn't just switch the camera angle.
All right. Yeah, that would be annoying.
I couldn't get into that one at all. They have Alpha Turkey Hunt, which is basically like a turkey shooting, you know, gun blaster shooting range kind of game. But for me, like, the motion tracking was fucking terrible. I'm holding the Move controller and it'll just like be inside me. And I could not get good tracking on this game, and I don't understand why. It could be cute and fun, but it was just so frustrating trying to play it with the tracking on it.
I was going to say, it sounds like a Thanksgiving tradition.
Jurassic Survival is another just, you know, wave shooter where dinosaurs are going to show up and you got to shoot them. I didn't have as bad of issues as I did with Turkey Hunt, but things weren't fantastic there. It was too dark. I know that was the kind of the point of it, because you're trapped in basically Jurassic Park with your Jeep is wrecked and you have a flashlight on your gun and you just have to survive as long as you can, but I don't know, it just didn't do anything for me. There's so many other wave shooters and gun games on VR that it's not anything magical. Sisters is a first-person survival, not even survival, but just like a horror adventure. I don't know if I was missing something, but the only thing I could do is rotate in place and like use a flashlight to look at things, and it seemed to last me about 5 minutes, and then like the one doll showed up and it was game over.
Weird.
But I got the trophy for going through the whole thing. So if the whole thing is 5 minutes, it just
seems pointless.
Yeah. The standout bit here is Dread Halls, which is a first person dungeon crawling survival horror game. So instead of like an RPG where you could actually, you know, like fight back and everything, this is just you're journeying through the dungeon. You have to find collectibles. You'll find enemies that can kill you, but you can't fight back.
All right, interesting.
It seems to be the longest, most fleshed out game there. And it is an award-winning title. It seems like if they would have sold that one by itself, it might have stood out a bit more. It just feels like they loaded up all these other titles with it that are pretty much sold separately, like on Steam. They dilute what Dread Halls is.
And yeah, too many other things just thrown in there. And from the sounds of it, it doesn't seem like you enjoyed that many of the other things.
I mean, there were some ups and downs. Honestly, if Dread Halls wasn't in there, it was going to get a deny it. I mean, there's a lot in there for only $15, but most of it is just forgettable. But with Dread Halls in there, it's at least worth checking that one out for sure. You'll probably get some enjoyment out of Poly Runner or Road Rage. Zombie Strike is another enjoyable one, but nothing in there aside from Dread Halls is really going to, you know, eat up a lot of your time and stick with you for a long time.
Yeah, I take it it's not a buy it.
No, it's a try it. It's especially for Dread Halls. It's worth it for Dread Halls. So try it, but don't expect too much out of it. next game is called Symphony of the Machine, developed and published by Stirfire Studios. It released April 25th on PlayStation VR, Oculus, and Vive for $19.99. An ancient tower stands in a barren land. Ascend it and discover its mysterious powers. With the tower's guardian by your side, conduct the weather to breathe life back into the lands around you. Immerse yourself in the beauty of Symphony of the Machine's world. This is a first-person puzzle game where there are a handful of different targets that you have to direct beams of light to. it starts off easy enough where you just have to guide the light to a certain one, and then, you know, they add little splitters that split the light into two, so you have to try aiming at two at once, and then mirrors to reflect the beam. When you highlight one color, like when you activate one of the sensors, they'll put like a barricade up in front of one of the others, so that'll lead to trying to figure out which one you want to activate first and then which one you want to activate then. The problem here is the controls. The movement in, like, I wish this was a game that had some form of free movement, and it's possible that on something like Vive or Oculus they have that option, but on the on PlayStation VR with the Move controllers, because it requires the two Move controllers, the only way to move around is to hold the thumb button, aim somewhere, and then hit the trigger button to actually jump to that location. And trying to fine-tune where you are is such a pain in the ass to do.
That sounds annoying. I know that a lot of VR games have that kind of movement system.
Like, a lot of them, it works well, but in this game where you have to constantly pick up items and move them and just fine-tune them, not having any kind of fine-tuning movement is frustrating. I mean, you could, I guess, walk around in your living room a little bit and try and get a better position, but you're still going to spend way too much time, like, pointing at the ground 2 inches away from where you are, hitting a button and then hitting another button to jump there and hoping that it's right, and then using the face buttons on the Move controller to slowly turn bit by bit by bit, because it moves the camera like 15, 20 degrees, something like that. I wish there was some kind of free movement on here, even if it was slow moving, just so it was easier to fine tune where you are.
Yeah.
And then you have the issue of a lot of the puzzles are trial and error, because you're like, oh, well, I know which three I have to do. And then you'll highlight one, you'll highlight another, and you'll finally figure it, and you'll highlight that third one, but then it blocks off one of the others that you did. Which means that you should have started with that one, and then you have to re-bend the light this way and that way. It's just, it can get frustrating. It's a gorgeous game. It's a really cool concept. I don't know if the controls are any better on other platforms, but on the PlayStation VR, it is going to be a bit of a headache. If you can get into it, though, if you could adapt to the controls and you're looking for a solid puzzler, Symphony of the Machine seems like it's there, and there's a lot of content there to get through. You just have the frustration of the controls to deal with.
Yeah, I'm excited for a time in which VR is a little more capable with free movement and just being able to move anywhere you want.
And a lot of the issues with all of these games that we're talking about, a lot of it comes down to the tracking of the PlayStation camera. It is such a shitty, worthless camera for VR tracking.
Yeah. They should have just ditched that thing and made a new system to go with it.
I don't know. It's because there's good experiences to play. And, like, I could just imagine on Vive or on Oculus that some of these games would track better and play better, but it's the PlayStation 4 is holding it back. The shitty shit fucking shit camera of the PS4. Which leads me to the fourth VR game. This one is just a preview. It's called Ancient Amulator, I think. Developed by Tai Games, published by Time of Virtual Reality. It releases later this summer on PlayStation VR. Ancient Amulator is a game which combines elements of shooting, tower defense, and other genres to create a new experience for VR. Players can choose different heroes and be the peacekeeper of a magical world. Each hero has his or her own unique gameplay mechanics. This is basically like a shooting gallery tower defense game where you can jump from area to area, a bunch of different pedestals, and just pick off enemies as they're marching towards your crystals. It seems to be a really, really cool game. Beautiful visuals. The biggest problem is the tracking.
I'm noticing a pattern here.
Like, there's two characters that you could pick in the demo. One is a mage and one was an archer. It starts you off teaching you with the archer, so I went with that. And you use one hand as the bow, the other is an arrow. And so you put the arrow near the bow, you hold the trigger down, and you pull your arm back and you let go. Like,
you seems like it should be simple and easy.
But the fucking tracking. there would be times where I'm holding the bow out as far in front of me as possible and trying to use the arrow to pull it back, and I have to, like, pull it into my face where I'm hitting the helmet to try and get a straight shot to an enemy. Otherwise, you're aiming off to the left or to the right. It's like it needs to be inside you to work.
Yeah, that sounds annoying.
I mean, this is just a preview. It's just a demo. It comes out this summer, so hopefully they could get these tracking issues taken care of. It's always possible there's an issue on my end. Like, if I move the camera to a different location, it might be... I shouldn't need to move cameras to play a fucking game. Like, just... I don't know.
Well, it sounds like a lot of the issues just resolve with the devs not being able to do anything about it because it's PlayStation's fault for using that camera.
Yeah. I don't know. I just... It's so frustrating because I know that the game underneath Ancient Amulidor, it is an awesome game. It is tower defense with actual first person shooting, and it's really, really cool.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool.
Tracking. So hopefully by the time that comes out, everything will be taken care of and be good, but I guess we'll see.
It's kind of sad because even we did a better job with tracking than PlayStation did, and PlayStation's VR or camera stuff came out later than the Wii did.
The Wii doesn't even use a camera. It's just the fucking,
exactly,
the whatever camera is inside the Wii remote.
And they had that little bar.
Well, the bar was just Wii. Two infrared lights.
Yeah,
the camera was inside the Wii remote, reading the position of those. But yeah, even that had more accurate bow action and, like, Link's crossbow training.
And the fucking Wii Sports Resort.
I hope whatever issues are there get worked out, because it seems like an awesome game.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll try it again with the mage and see if it's a better experience, but...
Yeah, because the mage probably uses a different kind of attacking.
No.
Maybe it'll be easier to play as that character.
Oh, man. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Zeroes, the Forgotten Land DLC, developed and published by Rimlight Studios. It released April 25th for $4.99. Dr. Vendetta is back, determined to have his revenge on the Zeroes squad. His plot is clear as ever: become the strongest being in the universe. Our heroes will travel across an ancient land, chasing the evil doctor to stop him once and for all. Explore a world inspired by the treasures, lands, and mysteries of the East. Includes a new character, new moves, and 8 new levels. CJ, what did you think of this DLC?
I didn't know it had a new character. That's interesting. When I scrolled through the characters, it just showed Mike and Dorian.
Yeah, there's a third one there.
Huh. Well, I wish I would have knew that. But I mean, I guess I just didn't scroll far enough or something. It's weird. Man. Anyway, the levels are really awesome. I love this DLC. I was one of the very few people that didn't hate the game when it released.
I didn't hate it either. There's so many, I don't know.
This game got so much hate, and I feel like it was unreasonable. And then when they released the patch in February, it just made the game an absolute just blast to play. It's just a mindless beat 'em up, really. I mean, you can basically just button mash and get through it, but it's a good time. And if you take the time to learn the controls, you can get good combos that do a lot of damage and are a lot of fun to execute on different kinds of enemies. This DLC in particular mainly reskins a lot of the enemies, but gives them a little bit of a different ability, just so that it doesn't feel like the same enemies, but in retrospect they are. There are like the small guys again that are just like in the regular game, like the tiny little robots that don't really do much and are kind of pointless. But they added the ability with the ones wearing blue shirts to transform into a much stronger beast kind of thing that can do a lot of damage and block your attacks. And then there are other enemies like these guys that are like the sniper robots in the regular game. You don't see them that often, but they're kind of there. They don't really have an extra ability, and they are extremely easy to kill. They almost feel more like the fodder than the fodder do. It's kind of funny. And then you got your like the different dog thing, which in the regular game was a dog, like a cyber dog or something. What is that? Cyborg dog.
Yeah, you could say Fang or something. Those guys were dicks. Yeah.
I guess you could say it was a cyborg. Anyway. But this time it's not like a dog, but it's like a dog. It's a hard animal to explain because it doesn't really look like an animal anymore. It's just kind of an animal. Like, it doesn't resemble any real animal. I guess the most resemblance would be maybe like a hog.
Mm.
But instead of doing the thing where they charge at you, instead when they charge up, they shoot like a giant bomb at you that'll knock you down and make you vulnerable to more attacks, as well as does a decent amount of damage itself. And then there are finally the really annoying enemies that I hate. If you remember those huge guys that I think they were like cows or something in the regular game.
Oh, yeah. But,
now they're like, I think they're still cows, but they're like bulls now, and they carry these two electric staffs, and just they constantly hit you with them, and then create like little spots on the ground that you have to dodge. That a lightning strike hits after like a second of them being there, so you got to press B to evade it. And then on top of that, they can like teleport around and shit.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, they're really annoying and hard to kill, and I basically just save all of my energy and use my gun every time I see them. And even a full use of the gun only takes them down to like to a quarter health.
Oh god.
So you still have to get some actual hits in on them. The levels themselves are really cool. I like the complete change of scenery from the normal game. Nothing's the same. It's more like fighting aliens and inside of like ancient China or Japan.
Cool.
It's pretty awesome.
China.
One of the bosses in the game is like a giant dragon, which was really fucking awesome. Like an epic boss fight, and I liked the pattern. It was easy to follow, but still it took a little bit of skill to be able to manage it. It was pretty cool. I do have a couple issues with this DLC. One, it deleted my save data.
Which we contacted the PR firm, and no one else reported an issue like that. So I don't know if it was just shit luck on your end or what the hell happened.
But yeah, that sucks. I had a fully completed save data with a almost fully upgraded character, Dorian, and when I went to launch the DLC for the first time, it just gave me like a brown screen with the health bar at the top and nothing. And then I couldn't do anything. It was just frozen like that. I had to just close the game, and when I closed it and relaunched it, my save data was gone.
That sucks.
Was like, damn it. It's like, well, slot 2 was gone. I still had slot 1 and 3, but both of those slots weren't anywhere near done. One was like a game on normal that I started in co-op, and then the other was a one on hard that I was working through, but that was still at only like 1.5. So I was nowhere near it. So I just started a new save date on easy, and luckily found out that at the very least I know I could just start with the DLC. Like, I didn't have to beat the game. Joe says that he has to, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't let me try the new stages until I guess beat the first two. I'm guessing it just remembers that you beat the game,
which maybe is nice. If it does, it's that would be pretty cool to at least maybe the save data is gone, but it still recognizes that I actually beat the game, because it wasn't like my total save data. It was just that slot. Like, it still might be saved on my profile that I beat the game.
Maybe.
So I was able to just start immediately from the DLC. And so I just did that. I had no upgrades, but it wasn't too challenging. I was surprised at the fact that it didn't really seem like you needed the upgrades to get through the thing. Like, I thought that it would get progressively harder, but that turns out not to be the case. In fact, the first level just feels like you're starting off at the first level of the regular game, and it just introduces more enemies as you continue.
Hmm.
Aside from that, there's two more things that were problematic. One, you cannot play the last level right now for some reason. It just shows a loading bar with downloading next to it on the last level. And I went to look that up and found out that nobody can play the last level. So it's not just like a thing for me. I thought maybe uninstalling and reinstalling the DLC might fix it, but that's not the case, especially considering the DLC is just 10 megs because it's actually just a license to play the DLC.
Yeah, it's in the update.
It's in the game. Yeah, so it was just like, that's a shame. I would like to be able to beat it. Like, that's the only level I have to do. I went through everything aside from that.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty excited to take on Dr. Vendetta again. But, other than that, the only other thing is it pretty much broke every achievement in the game. But that's mainly due to the fact that I believe when they were programming them, they tied this to beating the game. So in order to get the achievements for beating the game, you now need to beat the DLC as well. And the DLC is listed as like Stage 3, Level 1, Stage 3, Level 2 and stuff. So it's basically just added another stage to the game. So I don't know what they're going to do about that, if they're going to just untie it so the people that don't have the DLC can get him still, or if they're just going to leave it like that. And when they add the new or add the ability to play the last stage, it'll unlock all the achievements when you beat that one.
Maybe.
But either way, it does seem like that would be kind of shitty for people that don't have the DLC.
Yeah, I mean,
but then again, the DLC is $5.
Yeah, and how many people got the game free to begin with?
Exactly, and even the game itself is only $10.
Yeah,
it's not expensive. Overall, it's like I really want to give it a buy it because the DLC itself is really, really fun, but there are problems that are just holding it back, like not being able to play the last level. Specifically, probably the biggest problem.
So, do you want to just revisit this next week?
If there's a patch, I will. For now, I'll give it like a just cautious try it. Maybe buy it just to support the devs, but hold off because Grimlight seems to be the kind of devs that constantly update their game and stick with it, you know, try to make it the best that they can make it.
Game, they updated the game from launch because a lot of people bitched about the difficulty, and they went back, added checkpoints, improved enemy placement, and just made it an overall much better experience. And I enjoyed the game to begin with, but it is like, it's what it should have been when it launched. Yeah,
I feel like if it had launched like it... Oh, okay. That was a weird noise. If it launched like it was in February, I think the game would have been much better received. And I think the issue and why it's not received well still is because people haven't played it since that update.
Yeah.
They still think of it as the same game that released January last year.
Probably. But anyway.
And it's a shame.
It is, but hopefully, people will give it another shot now that the DLC is out, and hopefully Rimlight fixes the little issues that are there. But joining us now for two more reviews, Cole Martin, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
Just like snuck you in there, and CJ's like, what the fuck's going on?
Ninja did.
Yeah, that noise didn't just surprised me.
Didn't even get to complain.
It sounded like the call drop.
About me taking too long. Didn't even get to complain.
You're taking too long right now. Get with your reviews.
So, CJ, do you wanna jump off your headset now and we'll take care of The Walking Dead first?
Yeah, just post in the Skype thing when it's done, I suppose.
All right, first game that Eternal is here to talk about is called The Walking Dead, A New Frontier, Episode 4, developed and published by Telltale Games, released April 25th for $4.99, part of the season pass, clearly. Upon discovering the true nature of the New Frontier's leadership, relationships within the Garcia family have come to a head. As Javier, you'll decide the shape and nature of your chosen family. All the while, a herd of walkers moves ever closer to Richmond, putting pressure on allies and enemies alike. With distrust running rampant, you'll have to determine if blood is thicker than water. So, Cole, how's episode 4?
You know how I have the running gag about the episode 4 curse?
Yes.
And this even went back to like King's Quest. Episode 4 always sucks. They have managed to break the curse this time.
What?
I don't know why or how it happened, but I'm like, I fully went into episode 4 like, and suck. And it didn't, and I'm so fucking happy. I get to say good things about episode 4.
Yay!
Yay!
So, what happens in episode 4?
Episode 4 is the episode where we finally see the decisions that Javier and Clem and the other characters have made coming to a head. And normally you wouldn't see the kind of brawl that happens in episode 4 until way later in the season, which kind of worries me about what the fuck is going to happen later in the season, because 4 just lets the whole world burn and it's just unapologetic about it. Everything bad you have done up until this point, if you have made a mistake anywhere in this game, it is going to throw it in your face now. And you will be sad. Or unapologetically be like, fuck yeah, that's what I did, let's go. Either way, it's going to come back to bite you in the ass. This is the time where the game goes, we weren't paying attention. We do remember that. And it's a breath of fresh air to see, like I said, episode 4, it's the setup for the end. But this time I felt completely different. I was just engaged in it. I was just like, oh shit, the whole time. There's finally some answers. Depending on decisions that you make, you may actually get some answers to some of the most important questions in the series up to this point. So it's nice, it's refreshing, plays well. It's got the typical frame rate stutters here and there that have kind of plagued the whole season up to this point. No major glitches like we had in episode 2, though, where there were like the black lines running through the screen. We haven't seen any more of that since that was patched.
Well, that's good. It seems like, in general, Telltale needs a new game engine.
Yeah, there's just something somewhere that's not up to snuff. So they could really use something, at least for the frame rate. It does feel like it's just stuttery and kind of sluggish at certain times. Especially when if there's a heavy amount of action about to happen and it wants to save right before that happens, that's when it seems to kind of clusterfuck itself the most.
How fun.
Yeah, that's when it's kind of just like you can see an audible, or not audible, but a visual slowdown in everything. I'm so used to saying there's audio issues to things that audible is my first go-to. But it's a legit, like you can see it. You're just like, ah, no. And then it will just kick itself out and be fine. So that's really the only thing you can complain about in this episode is that, hey, it's a typical Telltale sluggishness.
So the only problem is that they still need a new game engine.
Yeah. Which is kind of a big problem when you say it like that. But at least the story is good, and it's episode 4, and that kind of just makes up for everything.
So
like, I can be incredibly forgiving for breaking the curse.
So I'm guessing you have a nice verdict for this one?
It's a buy it. Just these games are fun. You can't, they're mindless, and it's always exciting to see, you know, the decisions you make come back to bite you in the ass for better or for worse. It's just fun, and it earns its buy it.
Nice. Sounds good. I like in-game hanging out in the chat saying he wants to see you stream Outlast 2, which leads to our next review. Outlast 2, developed and published by Red Barrels. It released April 25th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $29.99. Outlast 2 is the sequel to the acclaimed survival horror game Outlast. Shocking. Set in the same universe as the first game, but with different characters and a different setting, Outlast 2 is a twisted new journey into the depths of the human mind and its dark secrets. No conflict is ever black and white. So, how many times did you shit yourself in fear?
I broke my controller.
I'm excited to hear about this.
Two ways. I broke it two ways. I cracked the case on it first, and then right before y'all started the show, I was playing a little more, and I dropped it, and the rat bumper got stuck. And then I was sitting there, like, all sad, staring at my husband, like, please fix my rat bumper so I can be terrified some more. Yeah, he fixed it. He's a good man. I think we'll keep him. But Outlast broke my controller twice.
That is fantastic.
This is one of the most horrifying games I have ever laid eyes on. And I don't react to jump scares very much, but because of all the, again, the word audible is going to come into play, all the audio cues, like the music and the sound effects, they just collaborate perfectly to make you absolutely just want to run and hide. Like, I would have to take a few moments, play, and feel like I got somewhere. I would like make it to a whole nother room and be like, yeah, I did something. And then I'd just hide in the barrel while I caught my breath and try to figure out where the fuck I was going to go next.
That's awesome. So,
and then inevitably I would pop out of the barrel and somebody would bash my brains in, because that's what Outlast does, and it doesn't let you be happy.
That's why I love it.
You can't enjoy anything you do because there's somebody waiting around the corner with a machete, and they will put it in your skull.
No Pulse asks,
go ahead.
Have you played the first one yet?
I started to play the first one, and then I realized I was running out of time. I wasn't going to get enough time with two if I kept playing one. Because I have this insane problem where, yeah, it's a horror game, and yet I still want to sit and stare and look at the blood drip. I want to check out everything.
Nice.
And it was working against me this time, and I was like... there's an achievement for completing Outlast 2 in 4 hours, in under 4 hours. I think I've got maybe 8 hours, maybe 8 to 10, somewhere in that range. And, like, I have one achievement.
Oh, my God.
Jeez, okay, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Because I tend to dawdle around, and I look for collectibles, and I kind of just explore, and I take my time. And... like, if you're gonna speed run it, you can't do that mess. The so Outlast 2 puts a lot of emphasis, just like Outlast 1, on you know, ride, hide, or die, or run, hide, or die. You're either going to just book it past people that have machetes and are gonna chase you, or you're gonna hide in barrels, closets, or under beds and hope that they leave you alone long enough that you can get where you're going, which is my favorite Never heard. You didn't spell it right either. No pulse. No. You're going to hope that they just go by, leave you alone. You can go wherever you want and be okay. 9 times out of 10, though, it's not going to happen that way. Most of the enemies are kind of on set paths, but they will kind of glitch here and there. And so you think you're okay, and then all of a sudden you've got a pickaxe in your back.
Nice.
One of the interesting things, though, and I can say this as somebody who kept repeatedly dying in multiple places over and over because I'm an idiot, is getting killed by the same enemy. There are different animations for that. They won't always kill you the same way. They might stab you in the chest with the machete one time, and then they might put that motherfucker in your skull the next time.
Nice.
You don't know. Like, it was almost fun to keep dying just to see how they killed me this time around. Like, when I caught on to that, I was like, this is not so bad, because at least it's interesting. And then I was in there comparing, and then again, that's how come I end up with 10 hours and, like, 2 achievements, because I'm an idiot who just wants to sit and watch the death animations. But at least dying repeatedly isn't boring. And you will die repeatedly, because there is no kind of guidance. And so instinct is all well and good, but when you're in the dark and there's not so much as like a dot or a map or anything, and you're supposed to just be wandering in the desert, you're going to end up running back the way you came and having to do that shit all over again. A lot. And then a lot more. And then you're going to die 10 times and go back to the checkpoint and get to do it again.
Nice.
So that can get frustrating. And if you're not, you know, careful or really good, it's hard to pick up the cues of where you're supposed to go, because either everything is pitch fucking black, or you've got your night vision, which gives everything a green hue. So it's kind of hard to tell one rock and cactus from another rock and cactus. You're going to end up getting lost.
So it seems that's more right. Open than the first game, because I know the first game was like very guided.
It's linear, but that's what makes it aggravating, that there isn't any kind of like guide or anything, because you can backtrack on accident. Mm. You can't really go like off the rails. You can't go exploring out, you know, off of the beaten path so much. I think it's even a little more linear in that regard than one was. Because at least one, you could kind of wander around into different rooms here and there. This is pretty straight path that funnels you to the next zone. And then you'll have a few
murders you along the way.
And murders you repeatedly. And if he doesn't murder you, then you get to be surrounded by people that have been murdered and are then hung up in trees.
Like no pulse. Achievement unlocked. Died by every enemy with every death sequence.
That would be my achievement that I would have.
That wouldn't surprise me. Looking at the achievement list of this game is evil.
Yes. Like, there's
finish the game. Finish the game in hard. Finish the game in nightmare. Finish the game in insane mode. Finish the game without hiding in a barrel or closet. Finish.
You can still hide under a bed, though, I think, because it doesn't specifically mention bed.
Yeah,
true.
But you can hide under the beds or then, like in the bushes or whatever. But the barrels and the
wardrobes. This one is nuts. Finish the game in insane mode without reloading the camera battery.
Believe it or not, all of those achievements are in the first one as well.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I actually have a friend who was practicing forever and finally got the achievement for finishing insane mode without reloading camera batteries.
That is,
because in insane mode, if you die, you start the whole game over.
Oh yeah, my god.
It's permanent.
Fuck that.
Yeah, but it can be sped run really quick, so.
Yeah, like you can, if you know where you're going to go, if you've played this to the point that you know the paths, you can just shoot right through everything. And there's a lot of emphasis put on just outrunning the enemies. They will give up. They will not chase you forever. So if you run enough and you zigzag around enough that, you know, you can lose sight of them or whatever, you'd be okay. You can do it. I can't do it because I don't have that kind of sense of self-preservation. But people who actually know how to get through a game without dying a million and one times, they'd be fine.
Good stuff.
The camera functions pretty much the same as it did in 1, but there is a new microphone function added now. I don't believe the microphone was in 1. You can use the microphone pushing over on the D-pad, and it lets you pick up voices through walls or from a little further away than what you can hear on your own. And it also gives you a little icon on your HUD for left and right, and they will spike, and you can kind of get a general idea from those little bars which direction the voices are coming from and how far away they are. And, like, if they peek to the red, then it's really close and you need to get the fuck away from there. but if it's more, you can hear voices that are further away, then they'll stay in the lower light white bars. There's my redneck falling out. And then, you know, that they're not as close to you, and so you're safe to travel a little more. So that was a nice little additional thing. But it, like I said, it would be nice if there was at least some kind of little mini map or something. And once you picked up somebody, you got like an indicator of, oh yeah, they were over there. Because if you're an idiot like me, and you'll just go running that way anyway. As soon as it's off your HUD, you'll be like, wait, where were they at? Oh yeah, machete in the head.
So. Machete like in the head.
I wish I could count how many times I just was like, ta-da, machete. Oh, see, I have a nice little list. CJ mocked me before for not having my little notes. I have my notes here, and I would like to point out that the door creaking noise that when you open the doors is the same audio file as the doors opening in Emily Wants to Play. The exact same sound. I was just like, I've heard that before. I have deja vu. I don't want to go in here.
That's funny.
That'd be funny if there was like an Easter egg room somewhere and Emily jumped out.
Seen an Easter egg with like Mr. Tatters or something sitting. Because there are toys and shit everywhere. This, I told Joe, I have one thing that bothers me in horror, you know, movies and games, and it's when kids are involved. And this one is very heavy on, not child rape, thankfully, but there
is. Yeah, I was about to say, at least it's not too dark.
Of child murder. And the main antagonist is a cult, a religious cult, who believes that outsiders' babies are demons, and, or, you know, the cause of sin and the cause of evil, and that God tells them to sacrifice them. So even within like the first 10 or 15 minutes, one of the first scenes that you come upon is a mass grave of infants. So that might be something that, if, you know, that kind of scenery bothers you, or the whole concept of children being sacrificed or what have you, then Outlast 2 is not the game for you to play if you are faint at heart, if you have a weak stomach.
Well, to be fair, the first one wouldn't be either. If you can manage through the first one, I think you can hit the second.
Honestly, I think the second one is far worse.
I don't know. That whole, I'll just use the term dick scene in Whistleblower was a little bit insane.
The dick scene.
Don't know if you've seen that one, but that's not great.
No, but
Well, I think we know what Eternal needs to do for next week.
Right.
Someone needs to play the whistleblower.
Oh, Lord.
So
there's fucked up shit in that one.
For $30, we gotta kind of sum up this. For $30, what are your thoughts on this?
If you like horror and you've got a strong stomach, buy it. Absolutely. Because it is fun and it's enjoyable. The graphics are really well done. There's a notable step up from Outlast 1's graphics. If you enjoyed Outlast 1, you're going to enjoy 2. Even though it's different characters, there are some small, without giving away anything, not spoiling anything, there are some tie-ins that you can pick up if you're looking through the collectibles and stuff and reading the backstory. Eternal needs to see the dick scene. Oh, Lord. But if you're faint at heart, if you can't stomach seeing mass graves of babies, you should probably not bother. But overall, I would give it a buy it.
Sounds good. Eternal needs to see the dick scene.
I mean, I have 3 kids.
Oh, man. We have one more game to talk about. Eternal, are you just going to hang around until the end of the show? Since
Sure, let's go.
We've only got
one more game.
One more to go with anyway. Save the Ninja Clan, developed by Wills and Sometimes You, published by Sometimes You. It will release on May 5th on the Xbox One for $2.99, so this is a pricey one. Save the Ninja Clan is a platformer for casual players as well as speedrunners. There are 2 ways to play this game. Play through the normal story mode or find secrets and bugs in the game to annoy the game manager watching. This one, I think, is going to get a lot of comparisons to Super Meat Boy in that it is stage-based, get to the beginning to the end without dying. And
all right.
Once you get to the end after your numerous deaths, it'll show a replay of the stage showing all your attempts at once and your hilarious fuck-ups and deaths. There are 30 stages in the game, 10 stages in 3 worlds, and then a boss at the end of those. The stages, they get tough quick. The difficulty definitely ramps up. It's nothing that is impossible to beat, but there is going to be a lot of trial and error to figure out how each of the stages works, what you're going to have to do, where the enemies are, how, you know, the new wrenches in the machinery fuck things up. You start off just as a ninja with standard jump, and you chuck knives at people. As you collect the collectibles in each of the stages, you can unlock upgrades to your knife. As you go through the game, you can also unlock new outfits, which give you different abilities like a double jump or a sprint or kind of like a little phase teleport thing where you just jump forward a couple of feet. The game is cool. Is ridiculous. It's a cute visual, cartoony visuals. The neat twist is the quote-unquote bugs in the game, which you'll see, you know, something in the stage like glimmering or flashing, and it just stands out, and then you'll go to it, and it'll be like a hidden wall that you could walk through, or like a secret pit that you could fall down into, and they'll have, you know, different challenges that you can do, or just finding them might be like, hey, you found the secret, haha. On the one stage, stage 4, if you run to the left instead of to the right, you'll jump across some clouds, and that the glitch in that level is, oh, you weren't supposed to come this way. Guess what? We flipped your controls. So left is right and right is left.
Oh, that's going to be rough.
Of course, there's an achievement to beat the game like that. Speaking of achievements, this is going to be another game that I'm sure people are going to be super excited about. All the achievements in this game have fucked up numbers, which
I noticed that.
I love seeing games come out like this. What was it? Envalor Verstad?
Yep.
Had fucked up numbers.
Verstance?
Whatever the weird name.
Yeah, it had like a 6 and a 3 and I think an 8 as well or something like that.
Yeah, everything in this game is 33 except for one that's 34 and then like 3 of them that are 36. So you are not going to get any normal achievements in this game. And
somehow you still managed to get it to work out evenly and you're at 630 right now.
I know, which when I saw that, I was like, oh, I love fucking up my score. And then I look, I'm like, oh, I'm even. What the? it's cute. It's fun. The boss battles are kind of frustrating when you get to them. Overall, for $3, it's kind of a must-own for only $3.
Yeah.
Is it a fuck it, why not?
It's I think it's above fuck it, why not? Because fuck it, why not is something that might be a try it, but it's cheap enough that it's why not buy it. But with this one, for $3, I think it's worth buying. It's a fun game. It's a cute game. There's plenty of content there for $3. It's a buy it.
Well, that's pretty cool. It's nice to have another game come up that's like you can buy it for the price of a 12-pack of pop. It's like, that's pretty cool.
Oh, do they say pop? 12-pack
of pop is $2.99.
Yes, pop. They say pop in Ohio.
Pop.
Yeah.
And really, you can't find pop for $3?
I said it's cheaper. Well, it's around the same price.
You could get a 12-pack at Walmart for like $2.50.
I was just at Walmart last night, and it was $3.30.
Mm-hmm. Are you getting the generics or
Pepsi? Well, I'm talking Coke. I'm talking Coke, not generic. Obviously, generic you could probably get for much cheaper. But
see, I've seen a 4 for $10 already at stores for Coke and Pepsi products. You got to find a good week. No, yeah, pulse, I mean, pop, what the fuck, happens. Unsubscribe. Yeah, who get the fuck over, says that's pop?
A lot of people.
Fucking stupid.
It's regional, depending on where you live, as to what people call it. I was calling it soda, and everybody in my family was like, why the fuck are you calling it soda? That's not soda, it's pop. Fucking idiot. So it's like, no matter what I say, I can't win. So I just started saying pop, because that's where I live.
Now, my friend in Louisiana said down there they call them cold drinks. Even if they're not cold, they just call them cold drinks all the time.
Now, that's just making it more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah, that
right?
In Georgia, apparently people just call everything Coke. Like, it don't matter.
Yeah.
Can I get a Coke? Is Pepsi okay? How about RC? You want RC Cola?
Ew.
Cola. But yeah, that's it for the reviews. With the Ninja Clan getting a buy, it's just such a goofy game, and for $3, you gotta buy it. Support games that are that cheap.
Yeah, it's not like they're just throwing fodder either. It's a solid title.
It's a solid game. It's a solid, enjoyable game, and it's only $3. So don't be an asshole. Buy the game.
I think that joins about, I think, a total of 5 games now that are like $3.
It's a good price point.
Yeah. People buy those games just because it's cheap.
Yeah. And before we play some music and get to the interview, some last minute news. Nintendo just announced a brand new handheld, the new Nintendo 2DS XL.
I saw that.
Because their shit needs to get more complicated every time. It releases
so much for not releasing another handheld at the Switch.
Well, they're trying to keep them separate brands.
Yeah. So,
like the Switch is their home console.
And then smartly they put new in the title again. Yeah. Because, you know.
The new Nintendo 2DS XL. So, basically, it reverts back to the old 3DS design of a clamshell design instead of a tablet, which I thought the whole point of having the tablet design was so that kids wouldn't break something with a hinge. So, fucking whatever.
Also, they don't even make 2DS games anymore. It's always 3DS now. Like, what's the point in buying a new 2DS?
The 2DS is a 3DS without the 3D capability. For, like, younger gamers, where their eyes can't properly work with 3D visuals, it's just 2D display. It's still a 3DS, but with a 2D display.
I don't know. Seems pointless.
Like, this isn't the original DS.
Like, who the hell is going to buy this, though?
A lot of people.
I mean, don't see why, when there's enough of DSs in the world already. Like, why do they keep making more? It's not like it's any more powerful.
I don't fucking... Basically, it takes the advances of the new Nintendo 3DS with, like, the added L and R buttons and the little mini circle pad or circle nub, and it adds a clamshell design to the 2DS, bigger screens, and I don't fucking know.
Yeah, ugh, I don't understand it. Like,
I could see my kids hollering they want it though.
Releases July 28th for $149.99.
So much money.
They're SOL. Yeah. They've still got a regular DSi, so I'm not breaking my neck.
I got a DS Lite, and I'm okay with that because I never play it. I have 3 games for it, and they're covered in dust. We've got a few
games, but that's my sister's fault. She's the one that caters to that. She's a Nintendo fan. She's not a gamer, but she likes Nintendo for nostalgia because she remembers playing when we were kids. But so then she's like pushes Nintendo stuff on my kids, and they're like, "Okay, but Xbox," you know.
Yeah.
But oh, man. I could see them being like, "I want this," and then I'd be like, "No, because it's expensive."
Oh well, what are you gonna do? So yeah, that's it for this episode. Stick around for after the break. We will have Cyril of .emu on the show chatting about Wonder Boy, Dragon's Trap, and all other kind of fun retro gaming goodness. One of you two, give some final words to end this part of the show. I don't care.
Eternal, you're the guest. Go ahead.
But I never have final words.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Thank you for sticking around. Joining me at this time, calling all the way from France. I know it's pronounced wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway because I got the okay. Cyril Imbert of .emu. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. You pronounce it perfectly.
You are a liar, and I know you're a liar.
No, that's true. That's true. I never lie.
Just for our curious listeners, tell us the real way.
So it's Cyril Imbert. Yeah, lots of R's.
I can't do that. I can't. Like, I have a hard.
The hardest part.
I have a hard time with Joe sometimes. Then again, growing up, everyone called me Camisa instead of Camisa, so I
really,
I know the pain of having your name pronounced wrong.
Yeah, right.
Pronunciated wrong. Cyril, you were joining us from .emu. You. I guess the most recent release that you have out right now is the amazing Wonder Boy, the Dragon's Trap.
Absolutely.
Tell us what you do at .emu. Who are you and what do you do?
So I'm a CEO of the company, and basically I do a lot of different stuff. We're not a big studio. We're a developer and publisher. So we do develop games, but we also publish them. So we publish our own games, but we also publish other projects that we find very very cool, like Wonder Boy. And my role basically is to facilitate the work of others, to make sure that everything runs well, that we that we managed to do what we want to do to accomplish our vision, and you know, like all the common administrative stuff, but also a little bit of production, a little bit of marketing, a lot of different stuff.
So what is the mission of Dotemu?
So basically, what we want to do is to bring back games from the old days, from the 80s, 90s, early 2000s now, because it's starting to be old now. And basically, we want to bring them back on the latest platforms, but any platforms, because the main goal is to make them accessible to anyone, any generation, any profile of gamer, so that these games don't fall into oblivion, and that the original fans can enjoy it, once again, but also the people that never heard about it get to discover them and enjoy them as we've been enjoying them for many years. That's really our main goal. We want these games to still be alive. We want people to still talk about it, play them, show them to their friends, so that the future game designers, future developers, future artists can still be inspired by this legacy of this history of gaming, which has been going on for 30, 40 years. And we must not forget what people and amazing talents used to do in the past. So that's pretty much our mission.
And as someone who grew up in the 80s and 90s, like those old arcade days, you know, that was my life growing up. So yeah. So when we covered earlier last year, when we covered Pang Adventures, like to me, I got to play Buster Brothers all over again, and I loved it.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly the point. I mean, like, again, we want to satisfy the original fans as much as we can, but at the same time, we really want to open it to as many people as possible, so even more people can discover it and get inspired by it or just have fun with it.
I'm looking at the chat, and there's a couple of people who dropped by, and hello to everyone hanging out.
Hi,
there.
Hi, everyone.
I see Jet's Joke says, test, will you foo, I'm guessing fix, Garou?
Oh, Garou.
not sure what they're specifically asking.
It's Mark of the Wolves. It's one of the projects we did with SNK. Mm. So there are many projects that we did with SNK. The thing is that we are just developers of these projects. We are not the publishers. Basically, SNK is working with us on many titles, but we don't really decide on what's being updated or not. We don't have control on it. We can't do the updates ourselves or anything. So when SNK asks us, we actually do it. But if they don't, well, there's not much we can do.
Yeah, and I'm guessing SNK didn't ask you guys about that.
Yeah, not yet. Well, precisely. We haven't heard from them on this particular game for quite a long time. So maybe they'll get back to us when they have, I don't know, a certain number of, I don't know, complaints or something. But for now, it's been a long time we haven't worked on it.
Well, there you go, Jets. Go hit up SNK and see what they have to say. The Rock Do 33 says, how do you pronounce your name again? It's pronounced Joe Camisa. Although I don't think you meant me.
Yeah, it's Cyril Amber. There you go.
That's so fun to hear. I'm going to use that as my ringtone. And then Big Tit says, hello, Wonder Boy is amazing. And that's... I just needed an excuse to say Big Tit on the show. Which really, if any of you guys have listened to our show in the past, which I know Souza has, he is one of our regulars. The word tit is probably on like the lower end of the things we say on our show. So yeah, I'm not sure if you've done many podcasts, but if there are any fun French curse words that you want to say and teach us, we are happy to learn.
All right. I'll try to find something cool.
Sounds good. So many people that we have had on our show over the year have taught us fun curse words in all different languages, and I don't remember any of them.
So, the most curse word used in French is putain.
And what's that?
It's like fuck.
Nice.
But you can use it for, like, it's like fuck. You can use it for many things, like when you're surprised, when you're happy, when you're sad, when you're like, it's the same, basically.
Is it putain?
Yeah, putain. Yeah, there you go.
Putain.
There you go.
Putain. Sweet. And you're going to have to teach me how to spell that, because that will be the name of the episode.
Okay, so it's P-U-T-A-I-N.
P-U-T-A-I-N. See, I am learning things.
So maybe the name of the episode could be like Putain de Wonder Boy, which means like fucking Wonder Boy.
Oh, man. Speaking of Wonder Boy, holy shit, this is an amazing game. Like, a lot of people might be surprised to know that the Dragon's Trap, it's basically a 30-year-old, about 30-year-old, yes, Sega Master System game, uh-huh, with a gorgeous layer of paint on top of it. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be it. Like, it seems like there's not much in the way of gameplay enhancements because it's very faithful to the original, but the visuals, yes, and the music make it feel incredibly modern, and I think, yeah, that just goes to show how goddamn good that game really was all those, yeah, years ago.
Yeah, that's really one of the main conclusions for me. I was really surprised because we've been doing, you know, like adapting games, old games, for a long time now. We adapted more than like 50 titles, I think. And this project in particular, the first time Omar and Ben came to me, so Lizard Cube, the developer, Omar is a crazy fan of Sega Master System. He has a collection of all games in all versions. He has more than 5,000 Sega Master System games at his place. And basically, they came to me and they presented me the project, and it's perfectly in line with what we do, which is what we've been doing for a long time. And, you know, he told me, like, I want to do the exact original experience. And for me, it made sense because that's what we've been doing for a long time. For Peng Adventures, for example, it was a new opus. So it was a sequel to the original series. So we added some stuff. But what Omar wanted to do was to keep the exact same experience. And I didn't know the game, strangely, because I had a Sega Master System when I was younger, but I never actually played Wonder Boy. So I started to get into it. I was like, damn, this game is pretty good. I really missed something. But I was like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, it's like for Windjammers, you know, like we announced it not that long ago. We're still working on it, but I was not expecting people to like it that much. Usually we have really like we have a core of fans that are really liking the game, and some other people like it. But to gain that level of popularity, it really means something. It means that any game, as long as it's good, it will stay good for like forever. And in the end, the graphics from the Sega Master Systems are really like early age graphics. Yeah. So the fact to totally change it, but keeping the exact same faithful gameplay, just make it easier to play today and nice, and you can totally enjoy the original gameplay, the original game design, which I think is one of the best of this era.
I honestly, the fact that you have the buttons in the game to just immediately switch back to the retro visuals and the retro music, it blows my mind that such a beautiful recreation of the game is basically just painted on top of that same, yeah, classic engine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was really hard work. It's mainly because Omar is a genius when it comes to reverse engineering emulation, especially with Sega systems. And he basically recreated the full source code of the game, but with like additional options. Was like he could do pretty much anything with the game. When we were talking about like different levels, how to like change different things, he was like, okay, no problem. In like 2 seconds, he could bring me with a special character and a special level. He could add monsters, or like it could do pretty much anything he wanted with the game, and that's incredible. And that's how he managed to make the game like 60 frames per second, widescreen, and added this paint, like this whole like new design to it.
And who was behind the new design to the game?
It's Ben Fiquet. He used to work with Omar on Soul Bubbles. I don't know if you know this game. It's a 2DS game.
Soul Bubbles. Let me look that up.
And it's a very beautiful game as well. And that's when they met, I'm pretty sure. And Ben.
Soul Bubbles. All right.
Yeah.
I've seen it, but I have not played it myself. I've heard a lot of good about it, though.
Yeah, it's a very nice game. It really, like, takes the whole potential of the 2DS with, like, the touchscreen and stuff like that. And basically, Ben is also from the Gobelin School, which is a very famous school in France, where animation is like, one of the best animators in the world are in this school, and that's where he's from. But he's also from the comic book world and the traditional animation world, and that's all, like, that's what he does when he works on games. He likes to, you know, like, show, like, put all his knowledge in animation and artistic direction into it, and that's why the result is that nice.
It is a beautiful style. It might be one of the best looking visually games that I have seen in quite a while. It's just the art style to it, with the especially the promotional art with, like, the stark white backgrounds, the dark black logo. It is just such a beautiful contrast and beautiful character designs. Every other static screen that I see in the game, I'm like, Xbox, take a screenshot, just so I could have new wallpapers for my system.
That's amazing. The first time they came to me, they had early drafts, and maybe it was just like the village was done at the time. And already I was like, wow, that's really beautiful. But it evolved with the time. So we worked really closely with Lizard Cube, as it was their first production by themselves. We helped them a lot. We financed the project, but we also helped for production. And so we had a meeting every month to know how to check how the game was evolving, if they had some questions, if we had some suggestions and stuff like that. And every month the game was evolving. Every time I was like, wow, that's getting more and more beautiful. And really, like, at the end, I was sure, like, that people were going to freak out about the design, because it's really incredible what Ben managed to do.
It's just amazing that even with how good it looks, it's still just that same Master System game underneath.
It
blows my mind how...
Yeah.
And a lot of people, this seems to be the consensus, that what you guys have done with Dragon's Trap is what remakes should be.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That sets the bar high, but for us as well, because we're not done with doing remakes. And but now we're like, okay, so, but it's cool, because now we know it. We, you know, like, we've been doing in this process of doing this remake for a year and a half now with Lizard Cube, and we pretty much know what people really want. And we, with Peng Adventures, for example, it was our first try, and we did it in a certain way, but it didn't have the success, or, like, people didn't like it as much as we were liking it. So we were kind of disappointed, and we were wondering if it was worthy to continue doing remakes. But then, luckily, Omar and Ben came to me and showed me the project, and was like, we have to do it. Like, there's no way we're not doing this. And we were right. So now we kind of have this experience of, like, what a remake should do and how it should look like, and hopefully the next ones will do, will get inspired by this amazing work from Lizard Cube, and hopefully other amazing studios like Lizard Cube will come to us and with ideas like that. It would be awesome. So yeah, it sets the bar pretty high for us as well.
Hey, if you could even get anywhere near that bar again with your future projects, I think you're knocking it out of the park. And despite what other people say, I loved Pang Adventures, so...
Awesome. I loved it, too. I mean, like, it's really... We did it with another French studio, Pasta Games. They're really good as well. And they're a fan of the franchise. But, I mean, for me, it's a total revival of the series. And the things they added are awesome, but it's really close to the original experience as well. So, yeah. But, you know, I think, again, the design, the artistic direction, as we wanted to stay maybe too close to the original game, people didn't really get it. Mm. But with Wonder Boy, it's just like another, you know, like, level, you know, of thing. And also the liberty, the things you could do, because the 8-bit version is so empty, you know, like, it still has a style and has an artistic direction with the means they had at the time. But what Ben did is just, like, it goes so much further than this. It's awesome.
Yeah. I guess games like Pang Adventures, they're geared more towards older gamers like me who grew up playing Pang or Buster Brothers in like their local arcade as a kid.
Yeah, I think so as well. The game is a bit less famous as well, and we didn't manage to get the rights for the American name, which is Buster Bros. And maybe that had some, you know, influence on that as well.
I honestly don't even know if that would have helped, because it's not like Buster Brothers is the most common game in the world the way it is. So I think just calling it Pang makes more sense. It's a universal name for it now. It's not Buster Brothers here and Pang there. It's just Pang.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like even the new Hot Shots Golf that was announced for PlayStation 4 is just going to be called Everybody's Golf. they're dropping the Hot Shots name in America, which, you know, it makes sense. If it's Everybody's Golf everywhere else, might as well give it a universal name.
Exactly. That's always the problem with when you're doing a remake or an adaptation, is that how far will I go from the original thing so that I can attract new people to get to discover the game without saying like, oh, it's an old game, I don't want to play an old game. And on the other side, like, you want the original fans to not be disappointed or lost when they try your remake. So it's always in between two things that are like in contradiction, and you have to find the perfect balance.
Yeah. I'm trying to go through the chat here to look at some comments. Mm-hmm. Toe Talk there says, I bought Nikki Boom on your shop, but now it's closed. I am so sad.
Well, I know who Toe Talk is, and he's actually 20 meters from me right now in the other room. And it's a private joke at the office, and he has nothing to do here. Toe Talk, just go away, please.
Now I'm starting to wonder how many people hanging out in the chat are just people you work with trying to fuck with us. The RockDo33 says, will there be a Pang Adventures 2? That would be awesome. No poll seems to agree with it, and I agree with it as well. So is Pang Adventures 2 something that could happen?
Well, not right now, that's for sure, because the results were not as expected. So we actually lost a little bit of money on it. So it's going to be difficult to you know, invest again on it. I would really like to. But maybe when we'll be more comfortable, we'll say, okay, let's do it just, you know, just for fun, because people will love it as well. And, you know, at least to satisfy at least the core fans. But it's not right now.
And then Toe Talk once again is saying plus one for Pang. And then a good point here, also on Switch, is a Switch release something that we could see for it?
That I would love it, and I think that would be perfect, because the game is kind of, you know, like, it's a 2D game, it's very well polished, and you can play with like one stick and one button. So basically with one Joy-Con, I mean with two Joy-Cons, you can play. So with the original Switch package, you can instantly play like with two players. And I was thinking the same thing with Windjammers. Windjammers is two-button game, so it will work as well. So I will definitely check with Nintendo what's possible to do, but I would love to see it on the Switch as well.
Now, you mentioned Windjammers possibly getting a Switch version. Is there any thought of an Xbox release for that one? I was sad when Windjammers was announced only for PlayStation.
Well, we'll see, because for now Sony really helped us out on Windjammers, and we want to really work with them as much as possible. And later in the future, it's just because on the Switch it makes sense as well, because it's a two-button game. But on the Xbox, I don't know, maybe we'll see. But for now, we're going to have some news soon about it. But yeah, we're really focused on PlayStation, which was really a cooler environment to work with for this game, especially for the online multiplayer. We'll see later. But yeah, the Switch, we've seen that a lot of on the social media, people asking for Windjammers on the Switch, and I think it would be great. So we'll see later what we can do, but yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I'm going to cross my fingers that we hear something about an Xbox release for that, because we are Xbox fans here on SML Podcast. So if there's a game that comes out and there's no mention of an Xbox release, damn it, I'm going to ask you about an Xbox release.
So I really like Xbox as well. I actually have both consoles at my home. And yeah, I mean, like, if we can, we'll do, for sure. Like, Pang was on Xbox. We already worked on it, so we can do it again differently. We just need to know to see what when's the right timing and if it makes sense as well for people. But if it makes sense to you and people that are listening to us, then maybe it can happen.
Another game that came out just on PlayStation that I personally would absolutely love to see this series show up on the Xbox, Ys Origin.
Oh yeah. Same thing. Basically, it's really thanks to PlayStation, to Sony, that we managed to bring it back on next-gen consoles. But maybe in the future, we'll see what we can do. But for now, our plans are really with Sony, because they've been, really supportive on those projects. Actually, for example, for Windjammers, my first plan was only to release it on PC, because I thought that nobody would care. So I was like, hey, okay, let's try to see what does on PC, and then we'll see for later plans. But when I talked to Sony, they were like, what? No, man, like, you have to do it on console. Please do it on PlayStation. Like, we'll do anything. We'll help you out. And I was like, really? Like, Windjammers, it's a very old game. I love it, but I don't know if everyone will love it. But I didn't know at the time there was such a huge community around it outside of France. And so for now, both of these projects are Sony exclusives. But maybe later in the future, we'll see what we can do with those licenses.
That sounds like we have to wait for the exclusivity contract to expire.
Maybe, but it also depends on the timing when it does. So, yeah.
Because, yeah, I would more than anything, I would love to see Ys in some form or another make the jump over to the Xbox. I think it's very easy to see that the Xbox is in dire need of more RPG franchises on there.
Definitely.
And this would be a good way to help. I think another thing that could help is, has there been thought of bringing Titan Quest to consoles?
That would be great as well. And I've been talking about it to Nordic Games, that they own the license. And it was a possibility some times ago. I don't know what's their positioning now on this. But we were ready to work, so we're still ready, because we worked on it on iOS and Android on mobile. But yeah, I mean, it would totally make sense. This game is just beautiful. It's like straight up double A hack and slash, and it's awesome to play. So yeah, it would totally make sense on console.
And then I know last year we got the 10th anniversary version on Steam.
Yeah.
It seems like bringing to console is just the next logical step.
Exactly.
It's good stuff. Yeah. We consoles need more love. Everything can't be on PC these days. There's too many things that release on Steam, clearly.
Steam is like the PC platform now. You can't do anything without going through it. But it's true that on the other side, you have maybe like, what was the time we released something? I think it was with Pang, when we released Pang on Steam, like maybe 30 games were released that day. 30, it's like, what can you do?
That seems like every day on Steam.
Games, there was like awesome games, you know, you're like, how can I compete with that? Can people just notice me like at some point? So yeah, that's the downside, but it's cool because it's also, you know, PC gamers are still there, and the popularity of PC gaming is growing thanks to Steam, because they're making it easier to play PC games and more convenient, more social. So that's a good thing as well. So yeah, but yeah, it's true. It's starting to look like the Apple Store.
Definitely. Yeah, it's just so much, and a lot of people seem that even with consoles, they'll go to PlayStation, and there's weeks where there's just dozen or more PlayStation games releasing at once, and then on Xbox there's like three or four.
Yeah,
it seems like a missed opportunity, but everyone looks where the bigger install base is, not realizing that it's also a more crowded shop to begin with.
True.
It's hard to find where you could stand out.
Exactly. It's really hard to make a choice in those cases, because you're like, okay, so I'm going for a platform that has a huge install base and another that has a decent one. And you don't really know, you know, what's gonna be the best. You know, like, it's true that you have more games on one, so you're gonna be less noticed, but on the other side you have less people playing on the other. it really depends on your relation with each first party, like what they want, if they like your game or not, if they want to do something or not, and that really changes everything, basically.
Well, I know for the games that you have released on Xbox with Pang Adventures and Wonder Boy, has there been any talks with Microsoft about looking into a Windows 10 version or being part of the Xbox Play Anywhere program?
Yeah, definitely. Microsoft is really pushing for that. It's just that it takes time and investment for us, and we sometimes prefer to focus on other platforms. They are definitely pushing everyone for that. And sometimes we just need to make choices for the good of the project. And yeah, we were not studying straight up things for Wonder Boy, at least for Windows 10, but maybe it will come later.
That'd be nice. I think the Play Anywhere program is really awesome benefit.
Yeah, definitely. That totally makes sense. That's just a great synergy. And yeah, it's like they have a console and they're like kings of PCs. So that makes sense to just bring these two together.
Yeah, basically getting two copies of a game for one price.
Exactly.
Which
it's like Sony did the same with PlayStation and PlayStation Vita, and that's the case for East Origin. When you buy it on PlayStation 4, you can on a PS Vita as well.
Do you feel that Sony needs to give more love to the Vita? Because it seems the general consensus, by gamers at least, is that Sony is just ignoring the Vita.
That's I don't think that's true. They're ignoring it. I think this just that it's the reality that just it's the responsibility is both from I think Sony and developers in general, because for example for Windjammers and East Origin, Sony really really wanted to have these on the PS Vita, and that totally makes sense. That made sense for us as well. But it was not like our first thoughts. Our first thought was like, okay, PS4 and that's it, you know. But then they say, yeah, you should do it on Vita. Everyone will love it. So really, that came from us. And we say, oh, that's true. Yeah, we should actually do it. But I think developers are also scared that the install base is very low compared to like living room consoles and PC. And the other thing is that it's starting to get to be old. And for example, we had to delay East Origin because of that. Because on the PS4, it's powerful gaming machine, and you can pretty much do anything you want, especially from a game from 2006. But when we started to develop it on Vita, we're like, yeah, it's gonna work fine, and you know, like that the device is like as old as the game, so it should be fine. But it's not, and it's really hard to optimize the game so it runs perfectly on the Vita. And I think that's one of the main reasons as well, is that the development time, the optimization time, and again, East Origin is a game from 2006. Like think about developers like that are developing games today that need a lot of power, and the Vita is not providing. So you need to do a lot of work of optimization and stuff. It's one of the it's one of the oldest devices today on the market. So that's normal. That's just the way it is. So it's more investment, it's more time, it's more frustrating as well, because you're spending a lot of time for something that would work on a more powerful device, even on today's smartphones, for example.
Yeah.
So, but I think the Vita is still an amazing portable console. And now the Switch is here, which is a really good portable console as well. But still, I think the Vita holds up definitely. The way it feels in your hand, it's light, you can bring it in your pocket. The games on it are just awesome, even if they're fewer than other platforms. It's just pretty good.
Yeah, I love my Vita so much. So the more that comes out for the Vita, the happier I am. I have a love-hate relationship with the PS4, but the Vita is, I can't stop saying good things about it. I love the Vita.
Yeah, it's an awesome portable device. And the good thing as well is that now when you develop something on the Vita, you have way less competition. That's what we're saying with the Xbox and PlayStation as well. But there's way less competition, and you're really addressing, and you're really like making fans happy, because people that love Vita they're waiting for games, and when you bring them, you know that you're making people happy, and that's really a huge part of our job as well, so that's a good thing.
I know most of the indie developers that we'll have on the show, when they talk to people and talk to fans and they ask questions, usually one of the first questions they're asked is it coming to Vita?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and really, like, if you look at PSX from last year in December, in the end, there are a lot of games that came out that were announced on Vita, so that's not too bad, actually. But it's true that there is less visibility, I think, for these games, because there are fewer install base, so journalists talk less about it and stuff like that, and it's a vicious circle. But in the end, there's a very strong core community around the PS Vita.
Yeah. Still, it's, you know, the more that Vita gamers get to play, the better. And I'm exactly. Incredibly distracted by the fact that one of my cats is on my desk staring out the window.
I was like, what is that?
we'll just get him in the picture a little more.
All right.
90% of my shows end up devolving into something about my cats. Oh, the perks when you have a herd of kittens in your house.
Cats are awesome. I just love them.
Oh, man. So I know you guys have worked on a handful of properties for mobile devices. Mm-hmm. Things like Double Dragon Trilogy or yes. Raiden Legacy, R-Type. Uh-huh. Is there any chance of stuff like that making a jump to consoles, or is that all up to the rights holders?
Well, it's a bit of both. It's really up to the right, the IP owners or us. It depends. Some projects I was thinking about bringing them to console. For example, right now we're really thinking about East Chronicles, for example, because we brought it to mobile. But I think it could be nice on console. So we're thinking about it.
Xbox.
potentially, but yeah, I mean, like, it's really sometimes the IP owner will come to us and say, hey, so we did good with the game on mobile, could we do it on console? And then we study the possibility, we study how much it would cost, or how, like, what would it mean if we like take some people of our team working on that instead of working on another project, for example. And then we decide, or sometimes it's just we're like, hey, I mean, like, this game is awesome on mobile, and it would work great on console. For example, Titan Quest, that's exactly the case. I came to another game and say, hey, so now let's do it on console. You know, like we did on mobile, we can definitely do something. And they were actually already thinking about it too. So sometimes it's just, you know, you have to be at the right moment, the right time. And, you know, when everything is good, then it can happen. But yeah, we're not close to the possibility of bringing some of our already existing license to console, but at the same time, we're always searching for new license to bring back, you know, like, and because that's really like what we want to do, and there are so many awesome games to bring back.
What games are you looking into trying to get back?
Many, many different games. There's so many. Right now, we're talking a lot about Treasure games. From what they did on the Mega Drive, on the Genesis, sorry. But we don't know. We always talk about games. We have a special channel on our internal chat dedicated for that. As soon as someone has an idea, it just posts on there, and we start debating about it. Says like, yeah, but nobody would care. This game is so weird, or like, wow, that's a cool game. It will work really well, nice on mobile. Yeah, but on mobile it wouldn't work because the performances or whatever. And we really talk about it constantly, and we explore any possibility from any platform, from arcade cabinets to console to old PC games. I think. A place where you have a lot of good games that kind of got forgotten right now, it's the early Xbox games, the first Xbox.
Yeah.
And the ones that were released like right at the beginning of the launch of the Xbox. Because at the time, the Xbox was not that popular, but still there were some really good games on it. And it's been a long time that people are not talking about it. And that's a place where we look a lot. And also it's easier because it's a bit more recent. So usually the source codes are not lost or damaged or anything, and it's easier to adapt. But yeah, I mean, like, there's so many licenses that we would like to work on.
So if you had free reign at some of those early Xbox games, which it's funny because on my last interview we were talking about like the Wild West of the early Xbox days, where Microsoft tried everything back then. Which of those games would you want to bring to current generation?
Well, I don't want to say too much. So, I don't know what names I had in mind. Let me check in my thing.
I mean, we'll just say this is all hypothetical. Like, I'm not asking for any real details. I don't want to jeopardize any kind of contracts you might be working on. Hypothetically...
Wait, let me check what I can say. because I don't have the names in mind right now, but I don't, just like throw me some names and maybe I can tell you something.
Clearly Voodoo Vince is off the table because Voodoo Vince Remastered just came out. but even personally, I would love to see like Blinks the Time Sweeper come back or something like Mad Dash Racing, Blood Wake. The one I like bringing up to everybody is Sudeki.
Oh, I don't know this one.
Which I know, I think Climax Studios are the developers. I don't know if it was a remaster, but they re-released it on PC a few years ago. And that's one I would love to see make a comeback.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. Oh, that's right. I think we actually checked it not that long ago. But wait, so the developer is Climax? Because that's always the thing, you know, like when we check an old game, it's like, who owns the rights and is there any chance that we can get them?
Mm.
And usually it's complicated. Like, because big companies, because sometimes, you know, the studios that did the games at the time that have the right got bought by another company that is bought by a big company. So like EA or Activision or something like that. And with these big companies, it's really hard to go and say, hey, like, you have this awesome game, can we like could we do something with it? Because usually they're like, no, we either like already have plans for it, or we don't want to deal with that license right now because we want to keep it for maybe if we do something later or something. So it's always hard. They don't really need us for that. They have the marketing power and everything to do it.
And that later never comes.
Exactly. There is a game I've been trying to get the rights for. I won't say the name because it would not be nice for the people, because I'm going to let you know why. But basically, there's this PC game which I loved, which I used to play a lot back in the time. And so I was like, it's perfect for mobile. It just makes sense, you know, like, and it's a big license. It's something, I mean, at least, yeah, for PC gaming, it's pretty big. And I went to see the guys, and I really got the right guy, the right person, and they're not that big. And I said, okay, so let's do this. You know, like, I just want to do a straight-up adaptation of the original game, not change much, just, like, adapt it to touch controls and stuff. And they say, like, no, but we're working on a free-to-play remake, and it's going to be awesome, and, like... we already have like a huge budget for it, so if you can't line up with our budget, then it's done. You can't do anything with it. So I was like, okay. So, and the budget was like something crazy. Like we will never have that kind of money, or at least we never had it back in the days. And so I said, okay, so we can do it. You know, I insisted a bit, but it wasn't the case. And so I was, you know, looking out to know if it was coming out. And it's been 2 years and a half now, and nothing has been announced or anything.
Oh, nice.
Like, you know, like,
putain. Clearly they're hard work hard at work on it.
Yeah, I'm like, we could have launched it two times since they said no, you know.
No Pulse in chat is saying Big Bumpin'. I'm not sure if you guys got those games over in Europe or not.
Big Bumpin'?
For the original Xbox and Xbox 360. I don't know if they ever went international or not, but Burger King released three games.
I don't think so.
For the Xbox and Xbox 360, and they were on special, like some kind of special disc that played in both an original Xbox and in an Xbox 360, which is apparently a big reason why they aren't able to be worked on for the backward compatibility program.
Oh, really?
Because of the discs that they're on. But I know a lot of people would love to see those games come back somehow.
This game is pretty crazy.
They had Big Bumpin', which is like a kart racer. They had Pocket Bike Racer, which is another racer. And then I think it's generally regarded the best of the three and still a decent game is called Sneak King, where you are the Burger King. And it's a stealth action game, I guess, where you have to sneak up behind people and surprise them with burgers.
No, but Big Bumpin' looks pretty crazy.
I mean, none of them are, like, particularly fantastic at all, okay. But I think they sold them for, like, $4 or something.
Okay. So yeah, that's crazy, because right now, like, an advert game would be for free, you know, but at the time, they were doing, like, advertisement on a game, but already also selling it, you know.
No, so, it's because you would go to Burger, you would buy it, like, on a disc. It wasn't like Yaris, mm-hmm. where it was just free download. Yeah. This, you actually got to buy and own them.
Nice.
Which but yeah, I mean, crazy. Like
those kind of games, it's hard to work on because you have this huge license behind it. And usually the license that have nothing to do with video games, like Burger King's, for example, they would be kind of reluctant on working on a new project, or they would like something very big, you know, like. But yeah, the other day we were talking with the team about Pepsi Man. I don't know if you know this
game. Oh shit, Pepsi Man.
It's the same. It's basically a runner with Pepsi Man, and it's pretty crazy. But it looks cool. One of our developers is just a fan of this game, and that's the same type of game, Pepsi Man. Yeah, take a look at it if you don't know it. It's worth.
What was that original PlayStation that one was on?
Yeah, PlayStation, and I think it only came out in Japan.
Yeah, that's such a weird game.
Yeah, but the cover of the game it's beautiful. I really like it. Like the box art is awesome.
Oh man. There's so many weird games that just lost to history. Like what other weird, just whether you think there's any chance of you guys being able to secure the licenses to remake it or what? What are some of the weirdest, just most fucked up games that you would like to try bringing back to a new era?
So there's one that I already tried and I will still try because we're still talking to Konami. It would be Parodius.
Oh.
And especially Sexy Parodius.
Nice.
This game is crazy, but it's awesome. It looks great. It's just like so many fucked up monsters and bosses. This giant geisha throwing up monsters, and like it's awesome.
Proteus was weird.
So weird, but it will work. It's very, you know, it's like the internal tip at Konami that did like a parody of Gradius, basically just for fun. But they ended up launching it, and people loved it. So it's not a small license, you know. It's not like an obscure license. Nobody knows it. It's pretty popular, so I think it would work great. And it's one of the weirdest game I've seen.
It's just, you know, Konami doesn't do shit with their licenses anymore.
Yeah, I think it will change. I think it will change.
What the hell's like the side-scrolling shooter? It's like similar in vein to Gradius or Parodius, but it's like the big buff men and like thongs.
I'm not sure.
I can't remember what the hell the name of the game is.
Oh, and it's a shmup as well, right? Or is it a run and gun?
It's just side-scrolling space shooter.
Okay.
Yeah, let me look this up. Space shooter with men in thongs. I'm sure that'll help me find something.
Oh yeah.
Oh man. I can't remember what the hell that name was.
I'm looking to like tons of games all the time, and you know, like sometimes my brains just say no. Like, don't try to remember. You remember tomorrow.
Cho Aniki. That's what it is.
How do you spell it?
Cho, C H O, Aniki, A N I K I.
What is that? I've never seen it.
Just look up some screenshots if you're looking for a fucked up game.
That reminds me of, do you know the game Mount Your Friends?
Yes.
That really reminds me of it. What? So just like a naked spinning man in space? That's awesome.
Who are the rights holders to that?
that's just pure gold, this game. That's crazy.
Developed by Messiah, published by Nippon Computer Systems, Hudson Soft,
Hudson,
and D4 Enterprise. So I wonder if it's still linked through Konami.
I don't know. I know D4, I know Hudson, and the other, I'm not sure.
Well, there you go. That is the next goal for .emo.
I'm going to propose it to the team. I think they'll have a good laugh.
It is time to bring back Cho Aniki.
Especially the marketing team, you know. What? How can you sell that game?
You're not allowed to do podcasts anymore. What is wrong with you? What the hell? That'd be amazing to bring back Cho Aniki with like stunning 4K high definition glistening man pecs. Question your sexuality in 4K.
That would be awesome. People would not really understand it, but whatever, you know.
No Pulse in chat saying if you give him ideas, he needs to promise that he releases them on Xbox. So yeah, if Cho Aniki comes back, Cho Aniki right. Remastered with hand-drawn, gorgeous hand-drawn.
Thanks for presenting me to this license.
It needs to be on Xbox.
I already see the face of our account manager at Microsoft when I come to them and say, hey, so I have this new project. You're going to like it.
Willing to give you an exclusive if you've let us put Phil Spencer in the game. Phil Spencer all oiled up doing like the...
Yeah, exactly.
Scanning him in with the, you know, all right, do the T-model. We got to get a good scan on your body. What the hell is your problem? Why is this happening to my life? What is going on?
No, but actually, it's not, you're not controlling the guy. You're controlling a naked woman, I think. But the weapons are two naked guys. That totally makes more sense.
I mean, clearly, that's, you know, that changes everything. But yeah, that is. There, you want some fucked up ideas that you could look into bringing back?
No, but that's awesome because that takes, you know, in the chat group that I told you about where we have our ideas for old video games, sometimes we come across some stuff and like everybody has a good laugh. It's pretty awesome. We should like make a whole Hall of Fame list of the weirdest games that we come across.
No Paul saying get Phil Spencer, Mikey Barra, and Major Nelson all scanned into the game. Oh, and then for the PlayStation version, you could get like Ken Kutaragi in there. You could get Yasp in there. Who would the Nintendo crew be? Get Shigeru Miyamoto in there. Get Reggie the Reginator in there. He'd be excited. Oh man, I do have like two ideas of games I personally like. Seriously would enjoy seeing brought back. One was an original Xbox title. I think in Europe at least it got a re-release on the Wii, which you know, why not? Enclave or Enclave.
How do you spell it?
Enclave. It's like a first person RPG dungeon crawling.
It was on which platform originally, you said?
It was originally on Xbox, and then it got a re-release on the Wii, but I believe it was only in Europe. And then I'm sure it's on PC as well. Hmm. It looks... Looking up on Steam...
Starbreeze Studios?
Yeah, I was going to say on Steam it's saying developed by Starbreeze and currently published by Topware, although I don't know how accurate that is.
Oh, yeah, okay, I see.
Like first, third person action RPG.
That's nice. Yeah, that's kind of the another game, the same type, which I was looking into, is Might and Magic. What's the name? It's kind of, you know, like it's a like first person. It was before. Might and Magic. Dark something. Dark Messiah. I think it was on Xbox. And it's just awesome.
I think it was on... Wasn't there one of those on the 360?
Maybe it was early 360.
Yeah.
Or late Xbox, I don't remember.
Too many games come out.
Too many. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of RPGs, so... I always have a little thing for, you know, RPG projects.
See, and we need those on Xbox. Xbox yeah, needs RPGs.
Definitely.
We have enough shooters. I'm still pissed that Puyo Puyo Tetris, released on the Xbox One in Japan, is not released on the Xbox One in America.
Really?
That makes no sense to me. Like, maybe it's already on the system. Just
because Tetris, I think it's Electronic Arts who has the rights, right?
Well, they in America, they just released the game today on PS4 and Switch.
But not on Xbox
One.
And they released it in Japan on Xbox One.
Yes.
That doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, I imported the Japanese version on the Xbox One sitting over on my shelf.
And then, that's weird because the Xbox market in Japan is not incredible.
No, I know. And then because there is no Xbox version, I ended up grabbing the Switch release for America. Okay. Because I want to support the game, but I can't support it on my platform of choice.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
I've been an Xbox fan for a long time, and I'm really disappointed that. You know, like, they kind of lost this, you know, the thing that everyone had for the 360 for some reason. I don't know exactly why, but, yeah, the catalog maybe, the fact that there's less indies going through that, the XBLA is not, you know, like, the XBLEAG is not there anymore. You don't have Mount Your Friends or Hidden in Plain Sight or Try Not to Fart. You don't have all these games that were just awesome.
You're talking about all these weird games. Have you ever played the browser game, Don't Shit Your Pants?
No.
Because that seems like something that you would probably enjoy. It's like a text adventure. Okay. It is hilarious.
Nice. Okay, I'll try this out when I come home, definitely tonight.
Like, that is bookmarked. You're going to have to let us know what you think about Don't Shit Your Pants.
Okay.
Make sure to write in. Our show's email address is thesmlpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free, if anybody out there has played Don't Shit Your Pants, send us an email and let us know if you successfully did not shit your pants. Oh, man. And then No Pulse asking if you've tried genital jousting.
Absolutely. I actually talked a lot with the game designer of genital jousting, and we had a really good like time together and a whole afternoon drinking beers at the Devolver booth.
I love the guys at Devolver.
I discovered this game on 9GAG, and I was like, what is that? I mean, like, I never heard about it. And then I saw it at E3 last year, and I really wanted to talk to the game designer. And actually at E3, what they did is that the controllers were dildos.
I've seen pictures of that. Have you seen it? It's amazing.
It was perfect. And yeah, this game is just awesome. It's just, it makes sense.
Now, if only there was a way to get that to consoles. I have a feeling the ratings board wouldn't be too happy with that one.
Well, I mean, like, you have terribly violent games on consoles, so I don't see why you couldn't have these, like, pretty colorful games, you know? Like, it's all right. It's adult stuff, but you have, like, rated M for mature, and that's it. Then you're fine. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. It should be there, but maybe it's too much. You know?
Because America's fucked up with our ratings. Yeah, we can have insane violence and gore. No problem. You show a dick and it's, oh God, it's the end of the world. Exactly. My children can't learn about penises. My son, how can he dare ever see a penis? Look down. That's how your son can see a penis. He looks down at his own because all men have them.
Exactly. Exactly. No, but yeah, that's probably the main reason, unfortunately.
Yeah, rating boards are stupid. I guess that's one of the perks.
No, I mean ratings. For me, you know, that's what I hear all the time. Like, you know, when people say video games are violent, and like, that's true. Some video games are really violent. And but when it's written on it that it's not a lot for people that are like under 18, then like, if I'm a parent and I see my child like playing on a like underage, like he's underage for the game he's playing, I was like, just don't play it, you know? So it's not the rating's fault, it's the parent's fault, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like written in big letters on it, you know, like that it's restricted for a certain age, and parents that play their kids, so it doesn't make sense, you know? Like, you know, it's forbidden for your kid, and you still buy it for him, you know? And yeah.
It's like, I see it because I have friends who work at GameStop here. I'll just hang out for an hour or two chatting with them, keeping them company. And I'll see plenty of parents come in with their kid, and it's like, you know, this is an M-rated game. And they're just like, yeah, whatever. It's like, it contains very strong violence and strong profanity, some instances of nudity. And they're just like, yeah, whatever. He's going to play it anyway.
Yeah, I would. When we were younger, we would have been happy if our parents would have said the same thing with porn. You know, like, it's okay. He's gonna watch it anyways.
How dare you hide these Playboys in your bedroom?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man,
how dare you hide this Call of Duty under your bed?
The scary days before the internet, when you couldn't just get titties anywhere that you wanted.
It was a struggle.
Nowadays, you're not even looking for things. You're just trying to, like, Google directions to a restaurant. It's like, oh, did you mean dicks? Yeah. Yes. I guess I did. I guess I meant dicks, yes.
At the time, it was all about trading and piracy.
How the world has changed from the internet being used to steal music and movies to the internet being used to look at, you know, random girls' buttholes on Reddit.
Yep.
So yeah, video games. Like I was saying, the Dragon's Trap is just a beautiful game.
it is, and it was a long work, but I really hope that we're gonna work again with Lizard Cube to bring something else.
I hope so, because they did an absolutely fantastic job with the game, and I am so thrilled that I was able to make it a part of this show as well.
But that's great, and I'm really happy that so many people, you know, we've seen many reviews and many people commenting on Twitter saying I've never played it before, and I was not even born when the game came out.
Yeah.
And they're enjoying it, and that's really the point of everything we do at .emu. It's like that's our main goal. So when that happens, it's just like we're just happy, and that's it. You know? Like,
so what is next for .emu? Is there anything that you guys are publicly able to talk about for what's coming next?
Not really. We're working on different projects internally. Some are for us, some are for others. I mean, with the success of Wonderboy and the experience we had from Peng and Wonderboy, we want to continue on that path. So maybe we work with others on new remakes. What I do these days when I go to conferences or like shows and stuff like that, I look around, and if I see a studio that's doing, for example, like a shooter or a runner or like a strategy game or whatever, and that reminds me of an old game, I go to them and I'm like, hey, like, would you be interested in like working on a very old license and bringing it back? You know, because I think that's the most important thing about when you do a remake, and that's totally what's the case for Peng and Wonderboy, that the people that are working on it actually loved the game in the past, so they know everything about it, and they can like put their heart at it, you know, and that's really important. So that's what I'm trying to do. Maybe we'll work with other studios in the future to do the same thing. I also want to do it internally now, because I think we're mature enough to start, you know, do our own remakes. So we're starting on a project right now that I can't talk to you about now, but maybe in a couple of months. And we're still doing adaptations, but it's the same thing. I can't really tell you about it. But yeah, I think you'll hear soon about us.
Nice. I'm definitely looking forward to whatever you guys are working on next. I hope whatever you're working on next makes its way to the Xbox One. Or eventually we'll see Ys or Windjammers or Titan Quest show up on Xbox. I want all your stuff on Xbox. Is that so much to ask?
Yeah. Okay. I'll note that definitely. We'll try to.
Sounds good. That's as long as you're trying. That's all I care about. Cyril, it has been amazing having you on for the past hour. You've been an absolute blast to chat with. Please come back on again sometime.
I will, for sure.
This has been very, very fun. Do you have any last plugs that you want to give about where people could keep in touch with you or where we could find out more about you?
Well, you can follow us on our Twitter account at @.emu, and there's going to be some news soon about Windjammers in particular. Some very pretty cool news. So yeah, people stay tuned. And right now, I think there is a pretty awesome press kit to win on our page. We're doing a giveaway of the last press kit that we have because people were going crazy. And it's a press kit that we made by hand with our little hands in our little office. And so it has a lot of value for us. So yeah, if you wanna have a chance to get it, just go on our page and subscribe, and hopefully, if you're lucky, you'll get it.
Which, by the way, I am incredibly sad to hear that that is the last one that you have, because I just want to find a way to bribe you to get one, because that thing is friggin' amazing. And
No, but you know, that's people lately have heard a lot of people telling me, like, you know, press kits, like, as soon as they get in, they go in the garbage. No journalist cares. Don't waste your time on doing press kits and stuff like that. So, but we just wanted to do that. It was so awesome, you know. We're like, come on, like, the game is awesome. We need to do something classy with it, you know.
Like, and how can I be put on your list to get a press kit in the future? Like, I need one of those Wonder Boy press kits, and I'm going to have to scour eBay and hope to God I could get one for an affordable price.
No, but you can talk to Jessica. I think you're already in contact with her, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's just that this time, because everyone was saying, like, no, don't waste your money and your time on it, we said, like, okay, let's choose just 30, you know, like, and like, distribute them to the big venues and see what happens. And but if we'd known, we would have done like 100. We're doing them by hand as well, so it's taking a long time, but still, no, it would have been really worthy, but we didn't know. We couldn't know at the time, but you know, that's a good lesson to show that don't always listen to what the other says, you know?
Exactly. If you find one more hiding out anywhere in your offices or warehouses or wherever, please, for the love of all that is holy,
all right,
let me buy it.
I promise.
Again, it's been fantastic having you on the show.
That's pretty cool. Thank you.
I look forward to whatever else is coming next from .emu, whether it is the upcoming ports of whatever games you've been working on, or Choaniki HD, whatever happens. Cyril, do you have any final words to end this episode of the show?
I don't know. I think that's it. Thank you for having me. It was indeed a really nice chat with you. And yeah, I hope I'll come back later for maybe a new project.
Thank you.